This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Sunday Groove. This is episode 7. It's episode 11. I don't know where my head is already. Very happy to be back. Very happy to be on the heels of an episode that got a lot of love on Twitter. And that was an episode about Alter Bridge. So this time I'm going back to not just a certain band, but just a certain episode and certain topic, and have a guest that I think I've been friends with for a few years now. I'm not really sure exactly how long, but has never actually been on the show before.
No.
I've had her counterpart from her podcast on here, but this is the first appearance of the other half of Geek and Sassy. Miranda, how are you tonight?
Good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm great. How are you? I just asked you how you are. Good grief.
No, I do that all the time. It's okay. I'm that person that they're like, how are you doing? And I'm like, Merry Christmas! It's okay.
Well, I'm glad to have you out tonight. Are you feeling more geek or more sassy tonight?
You know, Jenny and I actually get this question a lot, and I'm not quite... We always say we're both. Without, like, giving away your topic, because you haven't really said yet, I'm feeling pretty sassy, because, you know... This was a hard thing to kind of finalize here, but I guess more sassy maybe.
Okay, yeah, I asked her that exact same question. It's one of my go-tos. I like to jokingly tease a lot of people that I'm feeling extra sassy sometimes. So, and I try to do the little snap thing periodically,
snap thing.
Just to throw people off. It's weird looks, but.
I'm a bad female because I can't do, like, you're supposed to do it in some weird formation, and I can't really do it, but I can snap. Like, I don't remember what weird formation you're supposed to do.
I do three.
It.
It's kind of like...
Is it three, one, two?
I start to the right, then to the middle of the... Right,
okay, yeah, yeah. I'm, like,
right.
Doing it. Like, you can see me. Yeah.
It's like some kind of angle, basically, I think.
Yeah, it's like... I don't remember. I remember Legally... I'm picturing the people in Legally Blonde, because remember, they snap, like, all the time on there.
I actually had forgotten that. Didn't forget the movie. I imitate things from it sometimes. So, this episode is actually going to be about 90s music.
Yes.
And 90s music is a very tough topic to talk about when you're from this era, and when you're, I don't know, just... That's one of my big love eras, so it's... going to be really hard to narrow down, but I'm going to have some little caveats I'm going to go ahead and throw out there, even though I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, because I have earlier segments on here. So, if you're new to the show, I normally do some segments called Current Spins and then Music Memories. So, I guess I'm going to go ahead and do them first, and then we'll get to the actual topic. Usually I start the episode by talking about Current Spins, and that is simply just going to be albums I'm currently listening to. It can be from any time period, and just something I want to throw out some brief love for. Miranda, I actually forgot to remind you about that, so do you have any albums that you've currently been listening to that aren't going to be on your list, basically?
Oh, yeah. So I listen to, like, a lot of alternative radio. When people are like, what do you mean by that? It's, if you're familiar with Sirius Radio, which I think you and I have talked about this, well, I think mm-hmm. we have a lot of the same, like, music loves. So it's Alt Nation on Sirius Radio. And recently, like, kind of on my repeat button has been, I don't know if anybody heard about it, but Weezer redid Toto's Africa?
Yes, yes.
And, like, I don't know why, but I'm enamored with it. Like, I just can't get enough of that, nice. That yeah. one track itself. And then they have been playing a lot of Cage the Elephant. So a lot of Cage the Elephant and Young the Giant. So
I love Young the Giant. He's got a beautiful voice.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Have you ever watched any of their live recordings?
I have not. Now, I've seen Cage the Elephant live, okay. but I've not watched, because actually Cage the Elephant, little fun fact, I went to college at Western Kentucky University, which is in the southern part of the state of Kentucky, and Cage the Elephant actually went to college and got started in the town where my college is, in Bowling Green, Kentucky. So like they're nice. They're from there. So I remember them before people knew who they were. So it's kind of cool.
Nice. Like, see, I know I've heard some of their newer stuff, but I know their first album really well. It really blew up on local radio in Montgomery. So I remember it a lot from then, but, I haven't sadly followed them as much. But Young the Giant, I know after their first album came out, I went and I guess I was on their webpage and they had some just videos of them just in a little studio and they kind of had them stripped down versions of the songs.
Ooh, I love those versions usually.
With his voice in particular, it works so well. So I would definitely recommend checking that out. I haven't actually seen the ones from the newer albums, but the first album, definitely check that out.
I would recommend Missio to you as well. I'm not sure if you've heard much from them yet, but
I can't remember, really sadly. I know there's certain bands people recommend to me, and I will listen to it, but unless I do it a lot, I will forget about it. How do you spell that? Do you know?
Yeah, it's Missio.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sure I've heard it. I just can't think of it off the top
they
of my
formed
head.
In 2016, so they're one of those, like, you may hear a song and be like, oh, okay, I've heard that song, or I've heard a portion of that song, but it's only 2018, so they're fairly new to the world of music in general, but they're pretty good. I think Jenny and I have used a couple of their songs for intro and outro music before, if I'm not mistaken, because we take turns over there picking music, and if we have a guest, we usually ask them their favorite band, and we pick a song from their band. But I want to say that we used their song Bottom of the Deep Blue Sea on one of our episodes.
Okay. I probably looked it up, because a lot of times if I don't know the song, if I like it, I will look it up. There was a song a while back that I looked up and got into for a little while there because I'd never heard it before. But that's been a while back, so I don't remember. Anything else you currently listening to?
I've gone back to like old stuff. I've been listening like during gym. I've been listening, or like when I'm at the gym. Which they do have current music too, so I guess they're current. 30 Seconds to Mars. So,
nice. Yeah,
I've been listening to like a lot of older 30 Seconds to Mars. The Amazon app is fantastic, so you can say 30 Seconds to Mars radio, and it'll play you, like it immediately plays you a 30 Seconds to Mars song, but then it throws people in there that would be related to, so that's pretty cool. So I do that. Like, I'll usually type in like Young the Giant radio, and then it gives you Young the Giant songs, but it also gives you like other people related to them, and I've found people that way where I'm like, oh, who is this? Oh, okay.
See, I need to do that more. I mainly just stick to albums by bands I know, or I hear about a band and then I just get enamored with them. But then I just stay on those certain bands and don't discover the other ones. So I need to try that. I'm actually currently on the Amazon app because I was pulling up mine. One song I'm currently really hyped on, it's my workout song. It's by Run the Jewels, and apparently it's self-titled. It's pretty aggressive hip hop, but it's got such a energetic feel to it that I can't help but want to either at least dance or work out to it. So I wanted to make sure I called it right, so I pulled it up on there.
I'll have to save that one. Yeah,
it's very explicit because it's got some angry rap in there, like lyrics and stuff. But it's, I don't know, it's one that really hooked me. Russell,
I do earbuds working out, so it's it's okay.
Yeah. Well, I mainly tell my fans, because a lot of times, or the listeners, because a lot of times that stuff I talk about isn't, but that definitely very much is. The other workout song recently, or album, has been Seven Dust. They dropped a new album, which was amazing. Before I get to that, it actually got me listening to one of their older albums, Seasons. which is just amazing from the beginning to end. And it's aggressive as can be, but brings in the harmonies a lot. And that, to me, is so important in music, is bringing in that energy and harmony in there if you can. And some of us as a band, people just think about aggressiveness, and it's definitely there, but they bring the harmony as well, and that's one of the things I love about them.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, and the new one's actually called, oh gosh, is it This Is War? No, we're not. And of course, somebody messaged me while I'm on my phone. All I See Is War. I knew I was wrong.
Okay.
And it's so funny that the new album being called that, because you think it's going to be nothing but aggressive, heavy songs throughout, but there's actually a lot more piano and stuff on songs at times, and then kind of a return to the harmony, because at times the harmony is there, but not as strong, and it's
right.
Just more aggressive. I think that one's a really good mixture of it. But because I didn't have access to that on my phone, as I haven't bought it, that was, I think, why I went and listened to Seasons, because I'm like, hey, it's on the free version.
Right.
That's a workout thing. I had to throw a little love to Led Zeppelin's Dazed and Confused.
Okay.
Greg got me hooked back on that song a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, actually. After we went and saw Deadpool, we were watching just random footage of Conan O'Brien doing a silly version of Dazed and Confused. And if you've never seen it, look it up. It's amazing. It's hilarious. Conan can actually sing, but he's not doing a good job there, because he's just mimicking the falsetto and everything of Robert Plant. But
if you've never heard Conan sing, you should look that up too.
Yes, you should. But this video is just amazing, because it captures so much stuff. So like Greg showed me that, and then it went on this whole huge, and I'm using my hands a lot, but like a journey of why they did some of the stuff in the parody that they did. And so we watched, Song Remains the Same, basically. And it's a crazy movie/concert. So,
right.
And then the last thing that's been playing really heavily with me has been the Tremonti album. But I'll be honest, because I was getting prepared for this episode, I haven't listened to it as much very recently, because I was trying to mainly focus on my topic, and got really absorbed into it anyway. But A Dying Machine, Mark Tremonti, it just came out, I think the beginning of June. Yes, like June 8th, I think. Very aggressive album, but I've got to say, even the calmer songs, I really dig. So I'll bring more in-depth reactions to it at some point, but this episode just wasn't going to happen, because it's been about a week or so since I've listened to any of it. I guess we can, is there any other current things, or that you said yours, I think?
No, because when we started talking about doing this episode, I did also kind of switch over to another station, and I've been listening to stuff too. So, other than those few, I have been, Panic at the Disco has a new album that just came out this week that I'm working my way through.
Okay.
I say working my way through because I keep going back to like the same song over and over again. Like I'm flipping to the ones that I like and listening to them over and over again. But I moved and started listening to stuff because I was like, this is hard. And I started listening, and yeah. So I'm kind of like you. Like I moved to something else for kind of
right.
research and gratification. But.
Right, exactly. It's a good mixture. But what yeah. you were referring to with the Jimmy Eat World, or Jimmy Eat World's crap, Panic at the Disco, was what I call the Sam Neely syndrome. My college friend Sam, he would get hooked on one or two songs and listen to them literally like 20 times a piece. And
yes.
I'm cool with that. I do that sometimes too, but not in my car.
You don't subject something. See, that's the thing. You don't subject other people to that unless you have a child like I do, in which case they can get over it. You don't subject other people to that.
It was just funny. It happened really bad with Something Corporate. I don't know if you remember them or not.
I do.
The album North, he was obsessed with just two tracks on it, at least by the time he rode on a trip with me. And I was like, dude, I want to hear the album. Like, I don't want to just hear these two songs.
Right.
So it's just what I've titled Sam Neely, and he called me out on that a long time back on one of the episodes. He was like, wow, I get name dropped a lot, but he took that as kind of an honor almost. So we're going to slide right into the next topic, which is just music memories. There may or may not be a theme song here or not. It depends on if I remember to send it to Todd. but anyway.
Music memories. What are your music memories?
All right. So what is your first memory involving music?
Ooh, that's a tough one. The reason that's a tough one for me is I kind of, sort of, in a roundabout way, grew up in a musical household. My grandfather is actually, he was a Christian recording artist, performed at the Grand Ole Opry.
Nice.
My mom performed at the Grand Ole Opry. If it exists in Nashville and has been open since the 80s, or, you know, since before, like, a certain time in the 90s, she's probably performed there. I did, like, children's choir at church. I did show choir through middle school and high school. So, I mean, I remember, like, being really little and, like, singing stuff with my mom. But I guess, like, the most, like, important or influential moment is buying my first CD.
Oh,
like,
okay.
That was a big deal. Because there are so many kids that probably don't even know what a CD is. but, like, buying my first CD was a really big deal, because for the first time, like, I was picking it up and picking it out on my own accord in a CD store, as a matter of fact. I want to say it was, like, FYE or one of those.
Right, right.
Stores. Yeah. So I feel like, as far as overall, if I had to pick, like, oh, you know, off the top of your head, you know, best music memory, I think it's going to be like picking, because at that point it was in the 90s. So it was like where you start determining, like, who you are as a person and individually who you are. And so that was my time to be like, and this is what I want right now, for my Discman, even though, you know, I don't know. I don't remember how I got a Discman, like, to be honest with you. But I think that's the biggest music memory, was purchasing that. I've performed on stage with people that, like, if you grew up in Nashville, you would know who they are. But I don't think anybody down here in our neck of the woods, they'd be like, who? But, like, and that's pretty cool, too. Like,
yeah, no, that's awesome.
but, yeah, my music memories are all going to – I have a bunch because I was in show choir. But I think the big one is when the first time I got my first CD, like, on my own, just saying, hey, this is what I want. This is who I am. This is my taste. Like, this is me.
And what was that?
It was actually the Boyz II Men album that has On Bended Knee.
Nice.
Yes, that was my very first CD. And I pulled a Sam Neely on that. Like, I played I don't remember. I would have to pull it up. But I remember On Bended Knee was one of them. But I played it, like, over and over. Like, I'd skip back and play it over and over and over.
Well, I'm actually drawing a blank on it's not my I didn't need to answer the question, but I was drawing a blank on my actual first CD I got. I remember my first cassette I bought, and that was still a big, big deal to me. So that's, you actually kind of combined two of my questions. That's awesome. So you said you sang in show choir and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also play any instruments?
Believe it or not, I do not. I cannot read sheet music.
Oh, okay.
I had sheet music that I performed from, but if somebody says, give me an A flat, like, I can't, like, I can't do that. So, like, I can't actually read a piece of sheet music and say, hey, play me a C minor. Like, I can't do that.
but can you match notes, like, when somebody plays it or sings it?
Yes. So okay. If they play it, like, I know I need to go higher, I need to go lower, or if like earlier when you were talking about kind of, like, you know, making sure your voices blend together and harmonies and things. I can do that. Like, I can do that. But
awesome. Yeah, that's a gift in itself. I also do not read sheet music. Like, I can read rhythm line, but that's it. I was a drummer, so I should have learned the other stuff. And if I had actually paid attention in band, I would have learned the other stuff. But me and my one-track mind of just wanting to beat on things, like, I just... I wouldn't pay attention. Right? So I didn't learn all those things. But if somebody sings me a note, I can usually hit it as long as it's in my range. The harmony part, not so good. I'm much more likely to just hit the melody and somebody's going to have to harmonize with me, which has driven a few of my friends crazy whenever we've tried to perform. I'm like, dude, you just got to give me a melody and you can hit the harmonies.
Right.
Like when I'm harmonizing with an album on the radio, to me it sounds good. I don't know if I'm actually hitting a good note, but then I can harmonize. But as far as like whenever performing or whatever, it's always been, give me the melody. I got it.
Right.
Then you hit the harmony note.
I sometimes, so in high school I was a soprano and now not so much. And your body changes. And I also don't sing like I used to. We had blocks in school. So you had like an hour and a half, 2 hours in one class period. And you did that every day. So when you're training like that and you're dedicated, cause I don't sound at all what I used to. Like, obviously, if they're putting me on stage with someone, like, I sounded pretty decent, or at least, you know, small town decent, but I will sing now, and I'm like, oh, God, no, let's not do that, but I practiced, so kind of like when you were in band, like, I practiced every single day for 2 to 4 hours a day.
Right.
And so I've kind of lost some of that ability, which is what I will say, what I did not lose, what I learned the other night, I can still play Hot Cross Buns on a recorder.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah. My son was like, I don't remember much that we learned because, you know, it was that magical year. It's fifth grade where everybody gets what? A recorder. So he brought it in here after school ended because, you know, it ended at the end of May. I was like, let me see that thing. And I was like, heck yeah, I can still play Hot Cross Buns.
Well, don't sell yourself short on the singing. Like I rediscover different types of singing all the time in different ways. My voice has changed a ton over the years too. And one of the biggest things I learned how to do is not sound as nasally to hit notes. Most of the time, yeah. I've learned that. Occasionally I'll still find it if I'm hitting probably notes that I shouldn't be hitting. It gets a little more nasally, but,
It's habit to pull from your nose, actually.
Yes.
And so you're supposed to actually pull from your stomach, like from your diaphragm.
Right.
Believe it or not, like, I was one of those kids that, like, I didn't really, like, I was not an athletic kid. Like, I briefly played tennis because I didn't want to be in PE. And I was like, this is pretty simple. And I was like, I briefly ran track because I didn't mind running, but I didn't want to play, like, I did not want to play dodgeball. And I did not want to play basketball. Like, no. So, like, I briefly did those two things, but, like, a lot of the choir kids, the reason that they had, like, high school stomachs that we all had was because you sing from your diaphragm for 4 hours a day. So,
right, right.
Yeah. I do the same thing now. I'm like, oh, use your stomach. And I'm like, oh, but I don't want to. I'm just doing this for fun. Like,
yeah, I only took one proper singing class in college, and I remember they really harped on me for that because...
Yeah, now, they're pretty serious. I took two in college before I decided, like, maybe college isn't the place for me right now. But I did do show choir in college as well.
Nice. Cool. I knew we had talked about music at some point, like, mm-hmm. one of our earlier conversations, I think, Fanaticon. I have a weird memory. Like, I remember certain things.
No, so I do, too. I get
that's why
yeah.
I was thinking band for some reason, but that must have been where, like, we crossed over was... the show choir thing and the me and
which
actual
it's
band,
really funny, but I think I remember this conversation specifically because I want to say, and I won't be really mean, but I want to say it's because we decided not to listen to the band that was playing that night because
yes.
bless their hearts. I don't know if it was sound system or what was going on because you and I had heard them in the past and they were a good band.
Mm-hmm.
But that night just wasn't jiving for them. And so you, Garner, and I stood outside of the little performance hall
right.
because it was just, it was like, ah! And my brain was like, I can't read sheet music, but I know this is wrong. So I think that is when we had the conversation because
yes.
all of us that were standing out there had been in choir or band or done some sort of musical performing at some point. And I believe, my brain is really weird too, I want to say that that's when that conversation happened because of that incident. We got onto that because we were all like, oh.
See, I didn't remember what triggered it, but I remember the conversation.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it stemmed from that.
And it's coming back to me now, and yes, that night it was, they weren't sounding the best in the world, so we went outside to talk, and it was really cold. But
oh my gosh, yes, and I was still in costume.
I was really cold.
I had no sleeves and no, like, I had, like, they were shorts, but, like, I from, like, mid-thigh down and no sleeves. And it decided, like, hey, we're going to actually be cold in Alabama.
Was that Miss Marvel? Was that who you were?
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes. I guess that's how my brain got tied up was when I thought band. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and then my last one I had, I was going to ask you, if you could be in any band or any solo artist, who would you be?
Oh, my God. I don't think I would want to be a solo artist. I would probably sing... I think where I grew up, everybody would assume I'd be a country star. But I'm not super... Like, it's nothing against, but, like, current country is just not my jam.
Right.
Some of it, it's catchy. But I probably would not be a solo artist. I would probably be an artist. I'll give you a good example. Like Florence and the Machine, where, yeah, she's like really the attraction, but she doesn't make it just about her. She makes it about the whole group, if that makes sense. So I think I'd be in a group like that. I think it would be an alternative style genre, probably.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't want to do solo thing because just the pressures and all that kind of stuff with that would just not be cool. Plus, I know with me ever performing on stage, I'm much better when there's other people with me. So just me by myself or me with some musicians, I still the focus is just me. Don't think I would be okay with that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and even when you're a solo artist, you're a good solo artist because you have a good band.
Right.
And so I think I would... be like her or be, for example, you know, Panic at the Disco used to be like four people. Now it's just Brandon Urie, but he's decided he is still Panic at the Disco. So I think even if like mates left me and I stayed, I would still be like, this is this group or this is who they are because it's about the band surrounding you two. Like,
right.
If they're not good, you're not good.
Well, it's kind of funny you mentioned that, like at Maroon 5 at some point, like it feels like sometimes it's just Adam Levine now. I mean, the band's there, but like it feels some of the times like some of the instruments might not be as prominent or as important in certain songs. And I've wondered why he didn't just go solo, but I think it's partly name recognition and also, you know, the band does contribute, I'm sure, something. And I'm sure they'd like to still get paid. It's just they're a band that I think of that's changed so much over the years. And some of their stuff is just more of just, I don't know, it sounds like a synthesizer in him singing at times. And I'm just like, but it says it's the full band. Okay, we'll see. I don't know. That's where my crazy brain just went. I guess that was all my music memories questions. Because like I said, a couple of years kind of blended together naturally, which was kind of cool. It was almost like I sent you the list and happened.
Yeah, like years blending together when it's like, or a book series blending together, or movies, if there's like multiples, they do. They start kind of blending, and you have to like, I have to look up and find like where they actually separate. Yeah, so.
Well, this episode, as I previously mentioned, was 90s related, and for my list in particular, I've got to throw a few things out there. Number one, we are not ranking our top five 90s albums.
No.
That would be impossible and painful, and I would immediately regret my decision after I did it, because I would be second-guessing myself even more than I already do. Number two is I am excluding Metallica and Foo Fighters from my list, just because, honestly, two or three of the most important 90s albums for me have been Metallica albums, and I wasn't going to dedicate... this episode to them. Like, I've talked about them a good bit on other episodes, and I might do a full Metallica episode one day, but I was like, there's so much more than 90s. I'm not just going to focus on them. There's no Foo Fighters from Metallica on there, even though I've previously talked about them a lot, and their 90s stuff I've talked about a lot. So, like, it's kind of like when the Hard Traveling Fanboys say favorite current authors that aren't Geoff Johns. This is basically what I'm doing.
Okay, I'm so glad you said that, though, because my list, is going to be the same. So favorite, like current, not in any order, but will not include Dave Matthews or Nirvana, because I feel like if you had any sort of breath in you in the 90s, you were all about Dave Matthews or Nirvana or both. So my list will not include either one of those for the same reason that your two will not be on there. Like, okay. I just, like, you know, like, you get it. Like,
oh, I definitely do.
I can't do that. Like, I can't do that. Like,
well, and with me, Nirvana, I couldn't put on my list because that is one of those bands that I might later talk about. I loved certain songs by them, but I didn't get huge into them and really listen to them more in like full album form until college. Like I missed out on a lot of 90s moments because of not having the internet where you could just listen to music like you wanted, being limited to what you could find on the radio, and having a limited income to buy albums. You know?
Well, I will say, so remember the Napster bit that started at a certain point in the 90s? My cousin and I may have been people that received cease and desist orders.
Okay.
So limited income was there, but we may have also been the kids that for $5 could make you a CD.
Right. Well, see, I didn't get into that world. I didn't have my own computer with internet to do that.
Oh, we did it on his. Like, his parents could afford that. Mine did not have that. We did that at his house.
Right. Well, I didn't even, like, get friends with somebody that could do that until, like, late in, I was about to say college, in high school. So I didn't really get to acquire music as much that way. Like, I had some bootleg cassettes, of course,
right,
along the way. But I still had, like, I don't know, I guess what I'm trying to say, limited exposure. And I know we're on the same page, but I want to make sure listeners are to certain music because it was different back then. Like, if I had had a CD ripper and stuff like that, I could have accessed more. Or if I'd had the internet, I could have accessed more.
Oh, definitely.
But I didn't get that until college. And definitely in college, I used download programs quite a lot.
Oh, I did too.
But, yeah, so some of the stuff that I now look at back and I'm just like, holy crap, that's an amazing 90s album. I'm not going to be on my list because I didn't, you know, really get into it until later. So,
that makes sense.
So that, like I said, but if any of yours are that way, that's perfectly fine. That's just a caveat, addition I added to mine because it kind of made it easier, but also, I don't know, I just felt like I wanted to put some restraint on myself. So in no particular order, we're going to trade off albums, take turns talking about albums that one at a time that we chose for this project. So Miranda, what would be the first album you want to talk about?
The first album I want to talk about was like when actually you asked me to think about this, it was like the first one that popped into my brain, believe it or not. And that was TLC's 1994 release of Crazy Sexy Cool.
Yes, nice.
Which I feel like that album is the 90s. I know you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
but like
yeah.
Some people, like it is the 90s because most people, kind of like I said earlier, when you start kind of like coming out on your own and you're finding music that you like, or maybe your friends like, so you listen to it and then you like it, and maybe you like it because they do, or maybe you like it of your own accord, because most of us during the 90s were anywhere from like kindergarten age to like, or in our friends group, we were the 90s spanned like I said earlier, just privately to you, like that was your entire educational career, which is when you start developing who you are individually as a person. And so like, I can actually remember, you know, what school I was in when I started listening to this album and like the friends that influenced me to listen to this album and how we thought singing water, like we could all do the rap part to Waterfalls. When you're only in like the fourth grade, like, yeah, you're in fourth grade and you're like, I'm a white girl from Kentucky and I can do the Waterfalls rap. And realistically, you probably could only do maybe like a fourth of the Waterfalls rap. So
nice. So what in particular, are there any particular tracks from that other than Waterfalls and that stands out to you on that album?
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember if that is the one, my brain, because I'm doing the you moment where things are like blending together.
Yes.
So I'm having to remember if that album had, let's see if it's going to be nice here.
There's Creep, Digging on You.
Yeah, Creep. Okay, yeah, Creep was definitely one of them. Like, I don't know why, but like, even like the, if you just listen to the instrumental part of that, I dug that. I just kind of dug how it flowed. Of course, in fourth grade, I probably really shouldn't have known what Red Light Special was, but I really liked that song. Like, it's got like a, remember that whole like 90s R&B, like, flow smooth jam, as they used to call it, like,
yeah. Oh yeah,
I don't know, it had that and like it just was kind of like soothing, even if you didn't. I mean when I was looking back, the people that wrote these, like the writers on these songs, like I did not realize at that time, this is me being an adult going, holy crap, like Andre, Babyface,
yeah,
Jermaine
Dupri.
Yeah, I was
looking at Babyface right there.
I was like, holy, Prince? Prince
wrote.
Oh my
God, wow.
Yeah.
Had no clue
so
about
I
that.
So I was like, holy goodness. Scrub would probably be my all-time favorite.
Oh, of course, yeah.
But, yeah, I remember Creep was the big one.
You know,
and trying to do the Waterfalls rap.
In Creep, I'm being me, combining, right now I'm hearing part of the actual song Creep, but I'm also hearing Radiohead's Creep.
I know, because I like I really like that song too, so sometimes you have to, when you specify, like you have to specify which one. So, but yeah, probably if you're making me pick here, I'm going to go with Waterfalls, Red Light Special, and Creep. Because the other ones, when they start playing, I'm like, oh yeah, I know that one, but like just to name it to you, I can't just, like, name it to you.
Okay.
Like, there's one on here that I'm looking at the list right now, and I'm like, I don't remember that, but I bet if I played it, or we would both be like, oh, but I don't remember some of these songs right now.
Yeah, it's probably one of those albums, if I heard it, I would know a lot more songs on it, but, like, just
right.
Off name recognition, struggling with a lot of it. But, yeah, I remember that being, like, such a popular album when I was growing up. Not one I ever had, but one that I had to have at least heard the
radio. I don't think I owned it until later. Like, it came out, I want to say 90, so yeah, it came out in 94. I don't think I owned it until like 99, 2000, to be honest with you.
Right. Oh, that's a lot of albums in my life was that way.
That was me too. Because, I mean, I grew up on a farm, so we all kind of had jobs, and we all kind of got like, we all had our own like money. But I didn't get my own job until I was 14. So I couldn't really, I'm like you, like I couldn't really, if my cousin, if I pitched in on like buying a Rima CDs, I didn't pay him for the $5 CDs we made. Or like if, excuse me, or like if I got him a bunch of new like customers, like I would get CDs. But even then, like paying for my own or buying my own was a big deal. I think that's why my music memory is so like prominent, because it was a big deal to buy your own CD.
Right. Oh yeah. A lot of the ones that are going to be on my list, I actually had cassette bootlegs of, because of not being able to get my hands on a regular copy or not being able to afford it at the time.
Three of mine I actually physically bought myself, which was another reason why they ended up on the list, is because I purchased them myself, like when they released. So, and that was a big deal too. I was talking to somebody about that the other day. Is I remember it was a big deal, and kind of like on how movies come out on Tuesdays, new movies come out, or like Comic Book Wednesday. And I wish I could remember the day, and maybe you do, but like that would be album drop day. And like you,
it used to
and
be
now
Tuesday.
I've noticed they just drop whenever, but like you would go to even like small town, like Walmart, like you would go to Walmart, or you would go to FYE, or, you know, whatever was close to you, and you'd pick it up. That was it was a big deal that you got it that day.
I'm pretty sure it was like, Tuesday. They changed it in recent years to Friday for some crazy reason, but really since people don't go to record stores as much, or there aren't
right.
Really record stores like there used to be. I mean, they drop them whenever the heck they want to these days, but like
right.
It used to, I'm pretty sure it used to be Tuesday, just like, you know, the movies and stuff. But, I remember that. Yeah, definitely in college, that was a huge deal to me, going to the record store on the day albums came out.
Yeah.
Well, any other thoughts on Crazy, Sexy, Cool?
Nope. Just really, cause I pulled, you know, like your friends say, and I kind of would play those three there, like over and over again.
Oh, understandable. Well, I am actually struggling to decide which album I want to talk about first on mine, as I just have random stuff on my page right in front of me. I guess. I'm going to start with Stone Temple Pilots, Purple.
Ooh, good choice.
Thank you. Yeah, that was my first Stone Temple Pilots album I owned. I bought it randomly. I didn't know which Stone Temple Pilots album to buy at the time, because this would have been later in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, it was a CD, so it had to be late in the 90s, because I didn't get a CD player till then. But I remember buying this actually on CD at Walmart, and I was struggling to decide which one I wanted to grab. But this one I had to get, because I knew it had Vaseline, Interstate Love Song.
Yes.
And I was not disappointed. Like, I didn't know. Maybe I knew, maybe Big Empty I might have known also. But I grabbed this album, and one thing I was very surprised by, it was a big deal in the 90s, you know, parent advisories and stuff like that. And, of course, Walmart didn't carry them.
Yeah, I remember they went through this brief period where they did, and then it was like a big to-do.
Right.
And, like, we're not carrying anything that requires a parental advisory, because this is before ratings, really.
Right.
Like, they didn't put, like, E for explicit on anything yet. I think Eminem caused that. But, like, they didn't put E for explicit on anything, which you would think, if you really look back at some of the older things, there should have been. But it just said parental advisory. Like, that was it.
Right. Well, and I think, as far as from what I've heard, I could be wrong on this, but that it was kind of optional. Like, you, like, certain things I think got forced it on them, but some bands just chose whether or not to put it mm-hmm. there or not. So this album didn't actually have one, but there's a few tracks on there. It deserved it. And I was like, oh my gosh, they didn't edit it. And that was pretty cool to whatever age I was at the time. I think early teens.
Mm-hmm.
But this album came out in 94. And I was re-listening to it last weekend in the car, and man, it starts out crazy good with Meat Plow, good rockin' song. Vaseline and Interstate Love Song, as I mentioned, were probably why I bought them. I bought the album because it was the songs I knew off of it. They were great on the radio. And then there's one on there, Silver Gun Superman.
Yes.
It might be my favorite one on there just because of the heaviness. And now I picture, even though at the time I don't know if I remembered or even realized what Scott Weiland looked like and how he danced and everything, but that song I can't help but do the swagger, like just the dance and everything he did. So that one really gets high up there on my list. Big Empty was really good and is really good still, and one that I loved the crap out of because of the drums and the guitar and how they interact so much and make the song important was Unglued. Apparently it got some radio play, so I might have heard it on the radio. I really don't know. But just an incredible album from start to finish, and had a very fun outro back when those were a thing, back when you had hidden tracks and stuff.
I loved hidden tracks and intros and outros and, you know, all of those things. Those were great.
This one,
and I did get to borrow CDs because my cousin, I remember Loungefly.
Nice. Yes.
On your album there.
Yeah, Loungefly was really good as well. I couldn't recall exactly what that sounded like on a quick listen to my head just then, so I just didn't mention it.
I remembered when you said that, I was like, oh, Loungefly. Like, I think, but I don't remember any of the, I do remember Vaseline, but I don't remember any of these, any of the rest of them. But for some reason, I remember Loungefly. So that's going to have to be because I would borrow from my cousin Jenny.
Right. That's understandable. I know you would know at least three of them if you heard the songs.
Right.
But the fun outro was hidden in the towards the end of their end song, Kitchenware and Candy Bars.
Yes.
But there was a lounge song hidden in it performed by Richard Peterson, according to Wikipedia. But it's just so much fun, like just talking about sophomores avoiding a sophomore slump and just all this silly stuff on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing that they put that on there. Like, I love that tongue-in-cheek cheesiness that bands sometimes do. And it was something I did not expect from them. At that point, I didn't know a whole lot about them. But just knew that was, like I said, the first album I chose to buy of theirs. And still to this day, when I go back to their albums, that is the one that stands out the most to me. Have you ever watched music videos or anything of Stone Temple Pilots?
I did because I, I'm one of the lucky few that for a brief period during the 90s, we had cable. Mm-hmm. And MTV Kids used to be all videos. and that would be the thing, because MTV was actually, if I remember correctly, still fairly new at that, like, in the beginning of the 90s, or at least new to, like, the general population. And yeah, I remember, like, I would just watch a video, even if it wasn't a band I normally listened to, because music videos were cool. Like,
right.
It was very about, like, what was going on in the video, not just the music. It was like a video. It was a movie crammed into 5 minutes. They were just, I don't know. I was really enamored with music videos. So I used to watch, like, any and all music videos. So I do remember watching several of theirs.
Anytime seeing Scott perform and just some of the weird movements he did always just really stood out to me and found it very entertaining. So that was why I asked that, because it was I don't remember these music videos in particular. I don't know why, but I remember more his work with Velvet Revolver and some of the strange things mm-hmm. he did on stage. But that's like just what I associate anytime I listen to him sing.
Right. That would make complete sense.
So I guess that's all I prepared for that album, actually. That was just one I randomly decided to discuss first. So do you have any more thoughts on that one, or do you want to go ahead and go with your second album?
I can go with my second album, because okay. I just, when you said that album, I just for some reason thought of that one song. So this is one that actually, when people ask me, like, name your top something albums of all time, is always on my list. It is also one that I told you before, like, I did purchase some on my own complete accord. So, No Doubt's 1995 Tragic Kingdom.
I thought this might be on your list. Like, it was one that I think of, like, that I love from the 90s, but also, I mean, being a female, I can just imagine that being one of the most important albums to buy.
And to me, Gwen Stefani, like, I will follow her to the... So when she was even screaming, like, Hollaback and Bananas,
uh-huh.
I was with her. Like, even when she kept, like, I don't know, she just, to me, has, an amazing voice, a very, like... And I don't know, I always idolized her in general. So, you know, kind of like this is the time when you're deciding who you are and who you idolize. And Gwen Stefani, to me, always had, like... As a female, because you do look at other females because you're comparing yourself. But to me, she was the most down-to-earth person to kind of, like, look up to and follow in the 90s. Because if you're trying to work out and obtain a certain body type, hers is not unrealistic. She has a good voice. You don't hear... I mean, in recent years, you've heard some tabloid stuff. But, like, she wasn't in the tabloids. She wasn't... doing things your parents were like, you can't listen to that album. Or like, we don't think you should be, you know, doing that. Like, I don't know. To me, she was just kind of like the all around influence, female influence of the 90s for myself. And so this album, and it was their first album. No, it was their third studio album, but I think it was like the first album where people were like, oh, have you heard about No Doubt? Like, I don't remember the other two before this.
I
like,
think
I've gone
it was
back
their
since then.
Major label debut, I think.
Right. She's also, this album is also my go-to when we karaoke. Like, she's my karaoke go-to as well.
Nice.
So, my favorite has always been either Spiderwebs or Don't Speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then Just a Girl, which I think is, that's one of those songs that, like, is the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
With, like, the not quite JNCOs yet, the flat skater shoes.
Oh, God,
like,
JNCOs.
I'll just go ahead and admit I had some.
Wow, okay.
I did. I don't know why. It was, like, the bigger the bottom of your pant, like, the cooler you were, I think is the consensus around my middle school.
Oh, so, like, yeah, definitely middle school. That's what people thought.
Yeah.
I never owned them. But I definitely...
They were definitely... I'll be honest with you. They were hand-me-downs because they were expensive. Like,
oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure mine either came from a secondhand store or, like, TJ... Or, like, not, like... they did. I don't remember TJ Maxx at the time, but there were stores similar to TJ Maxx where you got the really named brands, but you didn't pay as much. And I actually made me... this made me think, like, did you do the, like, you got your albums at a garage sale? Did you ever do
sadly,
that?
No. Like, Flea Market was, like, the only...
Yeah, we had a big Flea Market. I did Flea Market. I would get a lot of albums because a person would be like, oh, $2, you know, like, which for you was like as a kid, that's still a lot of money. But I did. I got a lot of stuff at garage sales. So
nice. If we'd gone to garage sales, I probably would have. But flea market was where I'd get some, even though I later realized one of the guys was doing bootlegs and like to the point of like printing out the booklet and everything.
Yes, our guy would do that. Like you did, but I mean, you didn't care. Like it worked. So you didn't
care. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which now you could do that then, though, and like nobody would really say anything to you about it. But now, yeah, there's no way that would be happening. You'd have like a royalty suit and all kinds of stuff. And then other people would be like, a CD? What's CD?
Well, it's funny, you mentioned that album. Like, of course, I think about Don't Speak. That was a huge song where they kind of got on my radar. But then seeing it at a band, seeing somebody cover it at a band competition. Like, we'd done Marching Band stuff, and then they had a cover band in there, I guess, while they were coming up with our ratings and everything and deciding how everybody did. And that was the first time I heard Spiderwebs. And I was like, holy crap, this is amazing.
Oh, my God. It's an amazing song. The bar I used to work at. Oh, I'm so sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I know. I was just going to say, the bar I used to work at, they used to get really frustrated because we had No Doubt in the jukebox. And I would just play. I'd be like, no, it's my time now. I'm tired of hearing your song.
Nice.
And I would. I'd play that over and over again.
Well, I just remember like after that competition that one of my friends made me one of the cassettes of this whole album. And yeah, I would listen to the whole thing. But that was still one of the standouts to this day is Spiderwebs.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. That whole album was just fun. It was just, it was clean fun too. Like, I mean, yeah, there's obviously adult content, but it was like, it was clean fun.
It wasn't as in your face as some albums.
Right. It was very kind of hidden, which meant, and I don't remember having a parental advisory because when they started putting the parental advisories, like you couldn't buy it. Like they would clearly look at you and be like, yeah, you can't buy that.
Oh no, it definitely didn't have one.
No, it didn't have one, and it was just, I don't know, like I said, I don't want to keep saying clean, because people are going to be like, No Doubt's not clean, but no, like, for that, like, worried about what your kid is listening to, because how old would I have been in 95? I was born in 85, so yeah, I'd been 10. So, yeah, like, my parents would have been concerned with what I was listening to, and it was just, they didn't care, like, I could just listen to it till my heart was content, you know, kind of thing. You're also kind of angsty at 10 when you're a girl.
Oh, yeah.
So it fit. It worked. It was great.
Well, cool. That's a great one. Like I said, I kind of thought it might be on your list. I know it was on Ginny's list for sing-along albums. And that actually got me to revisit that album that I'd probably not touched since college. And still holds up. A lot of it does.
It does. And it is a great, she's right. It is a great single. And that's probably why two of the songs on here are like when somebody's like, will you do karaoke? And I'm one of those people, if you ask me to do karaoke, I'm like, I don't want to. And then you get me up there and then I'll do like five songs. But I do. I like to do Don't Speak and Spiderwebs. I do.
Nice.
I don't know that everybody else likes to hear me do them, but I like to do them a lot. So.
Well, me, it takes me forever to build my confidence up to get up there. But then if I do well, if the crowd reacts well at all, then I could stay up there all night after that. But that first, jumping up there thing is so nerve-wracking.
I'm like, no. And then I get up there and then they're like, oh my God, let somebody else go.
Well, I learned quickly my start song has to be Tom Jones, It's Not Unusual. Because that will not.
Oh my God, but that's fun. That is a karaoke must-have. Like
right, and it never goes poorly. Like it doesn't matter how I sound that night. People get into it, and so even if I sounded like crap, people were still doing the Carlton, and I still got my confidence boosted up. Then I can sing anything.
Nice.
But if I don't start with that song, might not go quite the same way. I tried "Take on Me" by Aha or Aha or how you say there. The band name from the 80s.
He gets too high. Like, I can't
Oh, my
the,
God. Yeah, I'd forgotten how high like, it hit. It was awful. Like, it was one of the worst karaoke's I'd done.
I apologize for me doing that. I think you just lost a couple of listeners.
No, it's
Yeah, I cannot.
That did not go well. I had to go back to Tom Jones after that because my confidence was really shaken by starting with that song one time. And I was like, why did I think I could do this? Like, why didn't I rehearse or anything? I just, As a joke, I just picked that song and it was horrible.
I think Place to Be Nation karaoke cart like needs to happen at some point.
I'm good with it.
This will be fun. This will be fun.
Hey, I could do something like that. You know, for like one of my major milestone episodes, if I wanted to, I've been teasing about to my like just to myself and Greg and Russell just about all these like really niche things I thought about doing for the 12th episode since that'd be my 1 year. But like, okay, I want people to actually listen to it, but I think karaoke they would.
That would be fun. Yeah,
they'd be entertained. Because there's a certain, you know, entertainment in bad karaoke still.
There is. I mean, look at how many years American Idol lasted off of the people watching it for the bad.
Well, which just think
I realized
how
mean we were with that. But you know what I'm saying? like you're saying, it is. It's a certain level of, like, bad is funny, too.
Well, there's a reason why Nick owned William Hung's Inspiration.
Oh, my gosh.
And I had to get a copy of it. Yeah, it's very entertaining.
Oh, my God. Like, my brain.
And I might be misremembering that. I think it was Nick that I got that from. I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure that was, like, one of the most random things I found that he had. And I was very, very, very happy. Well, any other thoughts on Tragic Kingdom?
Everybody needs to go listen to it again.
Yes, I'll second that.
That's pretty much it.
Okay. Well, my next album that I'm going to mention is one that I cannot think of high school without thinking of.
Okay.
And that is going to be The Offspring's Americana.
Such a good album.
Yeah, I remember it was one of those that I got a bootleg of when my friends got for me, or put me on cassette, actually, still, because I didn't have a CD. Well, no, I had a CD player, but she must not have had a CD burner. That must have been what it was. So I had this, and I listened to this. I'm pretty sure this is one of my cassettes that probably came apart because I listened to it so much. I would pop in my headphones and had to have my headphones on with this album because my parents, good Lord, they would have lost their mind if they'd heard some of the stuff on this album. And it's not like the worst album ever, but he likes his F-bombs and some other things. So, yeah,
right.
My parents would have gone crazy if they'd heard it. So it was always headphones, typically walking my dog. I would be jamming out to this or on the bus with my headphones on. But, of course, what intrigued me the most was Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Oh, my God, that song is just so great.
it really is it's such a fun song, and it definitely kind of put them on a path after that they were going to do a silly song like that on every album. And like to this day, like I know that I just had gotten their 2012 album, and there was still a song that wasn't nearly as good as Pretty Fly for a White Guy, but it kind of had that mindset of just something completely ludicrous and silly, but just that could get on the radio most likely. And so I kind of love the fact that they continue to do that.
And the fact that you get a parody made out of your song by Weird Al,
right. That
says something.
I've loved it when I've heard interviews of certain artists saying, I definitely didn't hear this from Offspring, not sure what their thoughts on it was, but like a lot of people saying that they knew they'd made it when Weird Al contacted them.
No, I heard the same, actually, yeah, I've heard the same thing. And I watched a concert that Weird Al did, well, via like, you know, TV, because he performed at BlizzCon, not this year, this past BlizzCon, but the one before.
Mm-hmm.
He puts on a show now. So, like, if you have made it into the performance that he does, like, I have to agree. Like, you're obviously worth being on somebody's radar because you made it to his. I mean, he's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I saw him back on, I think it was either 2011 or 12, his Alapalooza album. And
oh, yes.
Incredible. He actually came to Montgomery on that tour, and that is one of my favorite concert memories just because that was just a childhood dream, going to, you know, seeing him in concert. But Americana, let's see, I was making notes.
I don't remember that, what else was on the Offspring's Americana album.
You'll definitely notice Why Don't You Get a Job was one of the huge hits off the
yes
off the album.
And they still play that. So the like sister channel to Alt Nation is like the grunge station, which is what they call it. And it's like, it's stuff like this from the 90s. It's like Offspring and 311 and even some No Doubt. But yeah, so they like to play that one all the time.
Oh yeah.
And this album is actually one of my husband's favorite albums of like ever.
Nice. Yeah, it was one I went back and listened to. I mean, I'd listened to it a lot and throughout my life, but several months ago when I was prepping for a Tim episode, because originally we were going to cover Offspring, and we ended up deciding to skip them because those bands, like, Tim loves Offspring, but he said he didn't have as deep thoughts on them as he did other bands.
Right.
So that was when I rediscovered my love for this album even more. But, like, so you have the sillier songs, kind of fun. Pretty Fly for a White Guy, Why Don't You Get a Job? But then they get in some deep stuff on Kids Aren't All Right. That is a...
No, yeah.
That's a deep song. That's a heavy it song. Also, Have You Ever? Pretty much the same kind of thing. Deep, heavier aggression and everything. End of the Line. And then you don't get much more kind of deep and kind of dark than Walla Walla, talking about an actual prison.
Right. I liked that song.
It is. It's really good. But then this album decides to close out with the weirdest song that I've heard of theirs, and that is Pay the Man. And that's kind of like, it starts out all psychedelic, almost sounding like it belongs in kind of like India or something like that. And but then it turns into kind of blending in a little bit of punk after a couple minutes and everything. And I heard somewhere that, or read somewhere that they had actually recorded it on their previous album, but it was just so weird they couldn't put it on there. They decided to hold on to it and say.
That's when, if you go like check the lyrics out, you're like, whoa. Like, as an adult now, you're like, ooh, wow. Like you said, that's like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Somebody was in a place when they wrote that. Like, I don't know what kind of place, because everybody experiences things differently, but like, if you go back and read the lyrics, you know, because it's like, I'm probably going to butcher this, but they're like, say what you love, you know, it's all right. And you're like, wait. And then like, lies come from loose teeth. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, wow. Okay. I didn't remember that in there. I guess I didn't catch that when I was listening to it. I was too focused on the music.
This is one I actually did listen through again because I considered it for my list. It did not make my list, but I did consider it for my list. So I re-listened and I was like, did I hear that right? And my husband was like, what did you think you heard? And I told him and he was like, yeah, that's how the song goes. And I was like, oh my God. Because this was it. We still have our big zipper CD cases that hold. Remember, it was a big deal if you had the big four slot on each page. And it was like, you were cool because you had the big case. Well, he and I have both of our big cases still. Some of them don't play, but it's in his case. So I listened to it briefly.
Nice.
Trying to decide if it was going to go on my list.
Yeah, I actually did not pull up my CD cases. I pulled out just as reliable my backup hard drive and went through, because I pretty much one of the first things I do when I buy an album is I rip it immediately, because I know the likelihood of it getting scratched is pretty high in there. Even though I really try not to, it just happens over time. So that way I have my collection forever. So that's
right.
That's what I went through. It was easier for me to navigate my 90s stuff. And there was one I wanted to throw out that I like the song, but kind of doesn't age the best in the world. It sounds a little sexist. Is She's Got Issues.
But it's a good song.
It is a good song. But just like listening to it yesterday, I was just like, I kind of have to throw a little caveat on there.
But you have to remember, like everybody has to remember, not you, but everyone in general, you used to could say things.
Right.
That you can't now. You know, like, you can't. So. And doesn't he say he doesn't mean to be insensitive? Like, doesn't he say he doesn't mean to be insensitive or something?
He does. I can't remember which verse or chorus it was in, but he mentions that. I really enjoyed most of this album. That's why if Smash was almost my pick for 90s Offspring. But just for the whole memories and what I thought held up so well, I ended up swinging towards Americana instead. That's actually all my thoughts I had on that, shockingly. I have like tons of notes for a couple of these other albums, but that one was one I was brief, or a little more brevity at least, on what I wrote. So I think this might be a good point to take a really quick break and then come back and we'll do our final three.
Yeah.
Okay. Catch us on the other side.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcasts, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
As I walk through the valley where I harvest my grain, I take a look at my wife and realize she's very plain. But that's just perfect for an Amish like me. You know I shun fancy things like electricity. At 4:30 in the morning, I'm milking cows. Jebediah feeds the chickens and Jacob plows. Fool, and
welcome back to the second half of the Sunday Groove. Hope you enjoyed our commercials. And I hope you check out some of our other podcasts. Miranda and I have been talking about 90s albums, and it's actually her turn to talk about her third album.
Oh, is it my turn already?
Yes. Unless you want me to go first.
I kind of forgot. I was like, I guess it would be my turn. Oh, let's see. Which one of these? I guess I'll go ahead and talk about the one that you have. So this is a compilation album. And I don't know if they still do this or not. And you're the one that helped me figure out what year it was, because for the life of me, I couldn't find it. It's the 1996 Grammy nominees album compilation CD, I guess you would call it. So it has a little bit of all genres on there. And the reason I decided this one, and it was actually when I was flipping through that giant book of CDs I told you, I couldn't find it. And I kept thinking of this CD in specific because it has a little bit of everything. So when you're having a hard time picking, like, you can just go here.
Oh, yeah.
And it actually has a TLC song on it, too. It has Waterfalls on it. And Hootie and the Blowfish, Butter Cry.
One of my favorites.
Oh, that's such a good song. Which, Hootie and the Blowfish is not on this list just because, for the same reason, like, Dave Matthews is not on this list. Like, I can't do that. But the one I used to play over and over again, Alanis Morissette's You Oughta Know.
Yes.
And I remember, so I ended up getting an actual CD player, not a Discman, because do you remember the super huge boxy, like when they say boombox, like it was legitimately like a big box and could detach. So the speaker, and it was even super cool. So you could detach the speakers on either side, right?
Oh yeah, I remember those.
Yeah. So that was like, we always had, you could ask for a big thing from Santa. Didn't mean you were going to get it. But I knew about Santa early on, so technically it was my grandparents, because both sets of my grandparents were financially doing well.
What? You're saying it wasn't actually Santa?
Right. Oh. I had a really mean cousin that told me in, like, kindergarten, and I told this story on a Geek and Sassy episode where we had Greg on when we did our Christmas episodes, like, I'm pretty sure I told the story. Because poor Greg was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I actually remember that.
Yeah.
That was...
yeah, so she ruined it pretty early. But if you want to hear the story, go listen to like how my mom recouped it and was just like an amazing parent with that. The only reason I had this thing, because it was financially, it was not doable for my family to be like, oh, you want a boombox? Okay. That would have been something that I would have saved up for myself and then literally saved for like 3 months and then been able to get it, and there would have been a better version out that I couldn't have afforded. So I got it because both of sets of my grandparents went in and was like, that's all she's asked for Christmas. I asked for that, like that, and books. And a couple of CDs. So they made this happen. And they didn't get, like, the best one. They got the one that had, like, it had already been out for a while. Like, it was like, bottom shelf at Walmart, if that makes sense.
Right. Oh, I remember.
Yeah. And it was like a JVC. I mean, it was a good brand, but it was, like, bottom shelf. So I used to, no more earbuds, so you're playing it. And my mom finally, like, realized what I was listening to, and she was like, what the? Of course, my mother is very colorful in her language, like I tend to be. And she's like, what the? And she's like, do you understand what this means? And I was like, I know exactly what it means. And she's like, you don't need to be listening to this. And I was like, what that album is like a big deal because I remember. And honestly, it's not like I was super young. I was 11, 12-ish. I mean, and when we were 11 and 12, you already knew things. Like, we already knew things.
Oh, yeah.
Does my 12-year-old know? Will he? No. like, we knew, like, there was, you didn't, it wasn't something that you didn't talk about. But yeah, I remember her freaking out, and I think that's why this album is, like, always been one of my favorites, is one, it was the age of Shania, it was like the dawn and age of Shania Twain.
Oh, I remember those years.
And this
very
was,
well.
Yeah, Any Man of Mine, which my friend and I used to do the boots, Whose Bed Has Your Boots Been Under, but it had Any Man of Mine, Let Her Cry, and then Brandy. Once again, the smooth, like, R&B kind of deal. And as much fun of me as you guys make for this, and I am completely okay, it had Kiss from a Rose.
Oh,
from
I won't make
Seal.
Fun of you for that. I love
also,
that song.
It's the movie, like that. I love the song because of the movie. Because remember, the movie is one of my favorites.
I loved that movie growing up, and that soundtrack is incredible.
Oh my gosh!
Forever,
yes.
That's actually probably what we fall in love with that song. So I still love that song.
I know, it's like amazing. So that is just. I don't know. That is one of, I just loved that movie so much. So I remember that's the reason why I loved that song. And getting compilation CDs, I also remember was like, look what I got. Kind of like, you got it on release day. So this is one of those I bought myself on release day and was so excited about. And you had a mix. So it wasn't like, for people that like listened to a little bit of everything, it was great. Gangster's Paradise was on
here,
exactly. Guys.
I just noticed that. I didn't notice that earlier.
Oh my God.
When we were talking.
Like,
I was like, wow.
I don't care who you are. or what you believe, you know the lyrics to Gangster's Paradise.
Sadly, actually, I don't. I know Amish Paradise. That's the only version.
Once again, you've made it because Weird Al did a parody of you.
I know that song so incredibly well. Gangster's Paradise, I know some of the real words, but not all of them.
But yeah.
Continue. Sorry.
No, that's funny. But I remember everybody. Is this another one like Waterfalls? Like, you knew the words, but could you do it correctly? Probably not. Probably not. And Michael Jackson was big. We still had good Michael. Like, this was good. Some good Michael.
You were not alone.
Still.
That's incredible.
You were not alone. Oh, my God. And One Sweet Day, which is Boyz II Men and Mariah Carey. Another time. It's 90s. It's Mariah time, you know? Like, I just think everyone should go download this. Like, I don't know. It's everybody you could possibly – well, not everybody you can think of in the 90s. There's some people that I definitely feel like should have been on here. But, like, Coolio, Joan Osborne, Seal, TLC, All for One. That was, like, the jam.
Oh, that was – remember from the Three Musketeers movie, right?
Yes. It was – they put – I'm pretty sure it was Three Musketeers. But also, like, this would have been, like, our middle school era, I believe. So it was played like every dance you went to, and it was an awkward moment for every single one of us. And we all loved the song, but you were like, I don't think I want, like, I don't know about that. Like, so this is like the epitome of I grew up in the 90s during an awkward phase. That's exactly what the CD is. Because everyone probably has some sort of story to go with almost every one of these songs. Like, and when you grow up, as close to Nashville as I did, like Shania Twain, like everybody likes Shania Twain. So,
well, also Shania Twain, she fine. So,
she is, and she did, like, I think she's one of those that she drinks from whatever fountain of youth that, Captain Picard is drinking from over there.
Like, yeah, I watched some concert footage of her from like a year ago. Me and Greg actually were watching it and we were like, holy crap.
I don't know why, but I want to say Shania Twain has been discussed on someone's podcast before. Whose? I don't remember, but I want to say either in our group chat or in podcast, someone has mentioned their like feelings for Shania Twain before.
It wasn't me,
want to say it was Greg.
Probably.
And he made me mad at me, and it's probably like, I didn't say that. And I'm like, but I'm not saying you did, but I want, like, if it was you, fess up. But I think it was Greg. And I don't remember if he talked about her on an episode of Hard Traveling Fanboys, or if it was in our group chat that you and I are part of. Someone admitted to, like, you know. Yeah, I feel like it was Greg, but yeah, I don't know. Overall, when you look at me and you say 90s, this is a very great descriptor. If somebody was like, hey, what was music like in the 90s? I would hand them this album and be like, just listen to every song on here. Like, don't skip it.
This is an incredible list. I didn't look at it closely earlier. I just know when you named off a couple tracks, I'm like, it's gotta be 96. You mentioned Hootie.
I was super impressed with that, by the way. Okay, guys, so I could not find the I was like, I know like three, I for sure I know three songs because they were the ones I listened to all the time, and I can't find the year. And he was like, well, what was on it? And I told him before we started recording because I wanted to find exactly which year so I could like just talk about how awesome this album was. And he goes, you know what? I think it's 96. And sure enough, David was correct.
Thank you. Thank you for letting them know that because, yeah, I know way too much about music, and definitely Hootie and Alanis Morris, that were the big clues. Now, The One of Us, is that the What If God Was One of Us? Is that the song, the Joan Osborne song?
Yes, and okay. I loved that. And this is one of those songs that, again, could you imagine it being written and performed? Like, it was, yes, I get, not performed, maybe that's the wrong word. Could you imagine it being written and released now?
Oh, gosh, it would not go over as well.
Mm-mm. But it's just a fantastic song. It makes you think.
Oh yeah.
Because this is at the time. So I grew up, and this is no shocker to anybody that's listening to Geek and Sassy before. I grew up. I was born Church of Christ. When my parents married, I was born before they got married. So when my parents married, we actually started going to a Southern Missionary Baptist church, and I even performed, like, I went to, like, once again, with music. So I was part of a performing church youth choir that used to perform in different places. So like we would go to camp, we had a week long camp every year, and on the end of at the end of the week, the parents would come and we performed like a whole musical production for them at the end of the week. And so this was the time. So when this song came out and I was like doing all those things, this is when I started questioning. And I remember listening to the song and being like, oh my God, yeah, what if? What? And I remember they were like, no, do not ask the pastor that. And I was like, but what? Oh my gosh. So yeah, that's why I wanted your opinion on like, do you think it could actually be performed now? Probably.
I mean, it could be performed now, but
performed, yes, but like if it were current, like if someone put it out today.
Well, I say no, but I mean the Take You to Church song by Hozier did so incredibly well.
Oh my God.
So I don't know. I don't know. This one seems so more in your face, not cloaked at all. So about some
right.
of it. So I don't think it would do quite as well, but you never know.
Right. It's good music.
I can't help it. And Hootie and the Blowfish, Cracked Rearview Mirror was just incredible from start to finish. And
yes.
I'm shocked it didn't even come to my mind earlier when I was making this list, but I'm going to have to check out this.
By the way, Darius Rucker in general. So for anybody that doesn't know, Darius Rucker was he's the lead singer of Hootie and the Blowfish. And he is now a country like solo artist. And he's really good.
So his name's not Hootie?
No, he's not Hootie. I guess I remember people used to ask him that all the time.
Oh yeah, he got sick of it. From what I understand.
Yeah,
but you come up with a crazy name like that, you're gonna be asked it.
He's good though. He's real good, and you can listen to any of his solo songs, and you know, like, oh wait, like you know that if you know Hootie, then you know, like it instantly kind of like clicks for you.
Have you ever seen the Key and Peele Hootie and the Blowfish skit?
No, but I love Key and Peele, so now I need to go find this.
Well, you're going to have a hard time. I wish I remember which episode it was from. I couldn't find it on YouTube, but it was like season 2 or 3, I think. They just pretty much mix in all the songs into one as like a solo artist, and it was just so funny.
Oh, like, my God. Like, that's so funny. Basically, oh, I think combined. I found it. Yeah, it's not YouTube, though.
Oh, okay.
I'll send you the clip, because you've already seen it, but I'll send you the link.
Yeah, it's incredible. Only Want to Be With You and Hold Your Hand and all those songs are like mixed together, and it was just
such good songs. I actually saw Hootie and the Blowfish live.
Nice.
Yeah. It's really good. Sometimes it pays for your dad to be in law enforcement and living that close to an area that has constant concerts. We used to get free tickets to stuff like all the time. My mom, one of her second jobs was a convenience store. So like beer vendors would be like, hey, I have tickets. Would your family like these? Or like being in law enforcement, they would be like, hey, you decided you worked security for us last month and we just wanted to say thank you again. Like, hey, here's tickets to this such and such show. So yeah, the Hootie and the Blowfish was one that I got free tickets to. It was one of those like grass pass lawn seats, but you could hear everything. It was like in an outdoor amphitheater.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, they're great.
Oh, I imagine. I would have loved to have seen them, especially during this time frame.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm going to think I'm going to go listen to, like, that whole album again and make my kid listen to it and him go, what is this?
And I was all confused earlier when I said the All for One. I was thinking the song All for One, not the band. So I was very wrong. It was not on Three Musketeers.
Oh, it was on a movie, though.
Oh, I don't doubt it, but I was definitely confused on that, because the song is I Can Love You Like That. I was thinking of the song All for One and One for All that was on Three Musketeers, the live-action one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But I definitely remember this song really well, too. Well, since we're going a little poppier right here, I might go ahead and go with my poppiest intro that's going to be on, well, one of my two poppiest intros on my list. And that is going to be Goo Goo Dolls, Dizzy Up the Girl.
Yes!
I love this album so much. It was kind of a cheat, because I didn't legit have a copy of this until way later, but I knew the bulk of the songs. Like, I had heard maybe all of it, but I definitely heard the bulk of it, because they had so many singles off this album.
Mm-hmm.
And because CDs were so expensive at the time.
Do you remember the CD? Okay, not to interrupt you, but you just made me totally think about it. Remember, it used to be, and you're probably, you may have been saying this, CDs were so expensive, but do you remember you would buy, they had singles.
Yes.
CD singles for like $4 or $5, and it would be like that song. They always usually did a remix of the song, and then maybe they'd give you one song, but you paid like between $3 and $5,
right?
And it was called a CD single.
Yep, that's actually what introduced me to this, other than just the radio.
Yes,
and probably my bootlegs, or not my bootlegs, well, my recording off the radio. But I looked it up. I couldn't even find it. Like, I was finding all these different singles released, and I couldn't find the one that I remembered the picture for, because that's how my brain works. And so I finally found it, and it was actually the Goo Goo Dolls' Black Balloon CD single. But it also had a live version of Slide on it. So that was a win-win, that I got a good song, Black Balloon.
Slide is probably one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah. That was why I was buying or wanted to buy the album, but because it was like 18 or 20 bucks at FYE, then I found the CD single for like $2 or $3 maybe. I grabbed it and listened to the crap out of it. But because like this album, let me look at the track listing again, if my phone will do right. Like you got Slide, which of course is incredible. Broadway was released there as a single, which is great. Black Balloon.
Was Bulletproof a single?
No, Bulletproof wasn't a single, but it's an incredible song.
Yes.
And then Iris. So you have all these. Yes. And Iris was getting extra play because of the Meg Ryan movie. I didn't actually see it, but I remember it was on the soundtrack.
Oh, yes. I'm trying to remember.
It's Nick Cage and her, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, gosh. Why am I? I've talked about this before, I think. I can't remember. City of Angels.
Yeah, there you go. I was like, I have seen this movie. What is it?
So, like, you get all these songs. I mean, you got a third of the album that hit the radio. And that's impressive. That doesn't happen a whole lot of times.
That was kind of unheard of. Like, they were really big about, like, here's this new track or here's this new single. And you would hear it, and it would also be, like, the CD singles.
Yeah. So, like, I fell in love with this album. I would sing it all the time. It was one of the albums that I learned how to sing, because that was higher than I typically sang, because after my voice changed, I just stuck to like Metallica and stuff that was more baritone-y. But I started trying to play around a little bit more and realized I could sing some of Goo Goo Dolls. Not as well, obviously, but I guess notes. But yeah, well, according to Wikipedia, actually Dizzy did get released as a single.
Oh, did it?
It was the third randomly. So you get Iris, then Slide, then Dizzy. Dizzy did as well. Then Black Balloon and then Broadway. So this album had singles from April of 98 till September of 2000. Like, this had staying power. Good Lord. So the album came out in 98. But I want to give a little love to the actual not singles a little bit. Going back through it, like, this is one of my go-to albums just to sing along with and enjoy in the car. And I love the singles, but there's songs such as Dizzy is really good. Let me see. Their bassist, Robbie, does some songs on here which aren't typically as good. His voice isn't quite as strong as Johnny Resnick's, the lead singer's. But of his songs, I actually do like the Robbie songs on this album better than a lot of his. And that's not me making fun of him. It's just, have you listened to the Robbie songs before? Like the different singer?
My brain is... That's where they change lead singers, right?
Well, yeah. Originally, they bounced back and forth a lot. And I think when they were in their punk days, the bassist was actually their lead singer, Robbie. Because he had the more gruff voice. So on
this
the
is
albums,
one of those, like, I probably really have. But it's one of those, like, I need to go listen again because I'm just kind of doing,
Oh, it's fine. But it's very jarring because their voices are so different. And, like, any of the album singles are always going to be Johnny songs. But I love the fact that they respect each other enough to have Robbie songs on there. Like, I like that they do that. And a lot of people crap on him because of Robbie's voice. And I'm like, eh, it's not as good, but it's he's still got some good songs in there. But see, Bulletproof, I was jamming along with earlier. And was that the one? I made a note. Yeah, Bulletproof, I add some random harmony to it. I don't know if it actually sounds good. I need to record it and see if it does. But in my head, it sounds great. It's got a really good rockin' riff, and then it's fun to harmonize with. And then, let's see, All Eyes on Me is another great rock melody song, a really good chorus and everything into it. And then one that is so different and shocking that me, loving my rock and more aggressive style, I love Acoustic Number 3, which is literally mostly what it sounds like. It's an acoustic song that has some strings added into the background of. But it is one of the most beautiful
like
songs.
Like Coffee House kind of stuff. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And it's actually one of the songs that influenced me to want to play guitar. But because of the picking and the chord progression moving faster than I was able to do, I quickly decided to go with the easier song. but it was, it's another, it's a really good song. And I don't hit radio, but it's pretty well known among fans. But yeah, that of when I think of 90s albums, that is one that just really stands out. It was late 90s, but it's incredible from start to finish. And definitely my favorite Goo Goo Dolls album by far. Do you have any major Goo Goo Dolls memories or anything, or this album?
I will say the Goo Goo Dolls kind of, and I don't remember how the correlation happened or what made it spark. Again, I was really close to my cousins growing up, and I really looked to them as musical influences because they were just a couple. They weren't that much older than me, but they were like a couple of years older than me. So obviously, they were hearing about things and doing things that I hadn't quite found yet. And I really liked the Cranberries and. Was it Dead? I don't remember. They're, my brain is. Who sang Peaches? Remember the Peaches song?
Oh.
The Dead Presidents?
I don't think.
No. I always get it confused. Anyway, my whole Goo Goo Dolls memory and like reason for liking them is because of them. I found out about like the Cranberries. And the other band that is completely eluding me at this moment.
No, you're right. It is the Presidents of the United States. My bad.
Yeah, so them and Cranberries. So, like, if it hadn't been for Goo Goo Dolls, like, I would have never found those two. And I love both of them so much.
See, that song is so different than Lump, and that's the main song I know by the Presidents of the United States. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why that just didn't sound right to me, but that is right. Wow.
Their songs are kind of like, when you listen to some of them, you're like, how is that not like a completely different group of people?
Right. That sounds bizarrely different from... I don't know what, but that was only one I only heard on the radio, so I didn't, I guess I never knew who sang it. Interesting.
I will say that's been always, and that's like current, that's past and current. That was always something that's kind of disappointing is like you find this album, you know, either through the singles or like early release, for example, Panic at the Disco CD that just came out this week, I was telling you about earlier. They only played like one of the songs, like leading up, they're like, this album releases, blah, 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 and you're going to love it, but I want you to hear the debut track. So kind of like, it would have been a CD single if we were still doing that. But there's so many other songs that once you actually physically get the album, and this is anybody, you're like, this is amazing. Why is this never on the radio? Like, why was this not picked to be on the radio? I always kind of bummed me out that, like, because a lot more people did listen to straight radio in the night, like actual radio. When I say straight radio, I mean, like, there wasn't, like, Sirius, there wasn't CDs, there wasn't MP3s. So, like, you did listen to actually whatever local area you lived in's radio station.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. I've just always been kind of curious, like, why was this never on the radio?
And which song is that that you're referring to?
Just any of them in general. Like, as you said, like, I don't know how that you said one about the Goo Goo Dolls, and I apologize, you said it, but I don't remember. You're like, I never heard that one on the radio, but, you know, it's one you really, really love. So it baffles
Dizzy,
me.
Probably.
Yeah, Dizzy. And talking about music in general, how usually when a person gets an album, the whole fan base is like, why was this one not, like, on the radio?
Oh, sometimes, and I know a lot of times it's a mixture of the record label and the band picking radio singles. And so sometimes I think it's the, you know, record label was just like, that's not going to get good play. So they pick something else.
Right.
And sometimes they pick really poorly. And it can really hurt an album. But this, like I said, this album had some amazing lasting power.
It
especially
did.
As a follow-up from their only big hit before that was Name off of, was that Boy Named Goo that was before this? I think so. So just an important one. And like I said, it's one that holds up because that's what I tried to pick on my album or my list was albums that hold up, not just that I loved at the time, but they actually hold up. Because there were several that almost made my list, and then I went back and I was like, I don't know about this. I don't really.
No,
not
I
that I'm
the
embarrassed
same.
Of, but just like it
right.
doesn't hold up well. So what do you have next for us?
So the next one I have is kind of like me being like, hey, yes, I really do like pumpkin spice lattes. and in 98, so it's later into the 90s, starting to like kind of get to the end there. But it was Dixie Chicks' debut, Wide Open Spaces.
I'm sorry, I'm not making fun of you.
No, I'm completely okay with
you
laughing at me. I'm totally okay. See what I mean now about like, you know, people look at me and they're like, oh, I bet you're one of those white girls. You like pumpkin spice lattes, don't you? And I'm like, yes. I like, but for the record, I love anything pumpkin spice. I always have, like, even as a kid. And I do know the difference that pumpkin spice seasoning that goes in your stuff is not pumpkin. I'm aware of this. It's okay. Anyway, so the Dixie Chicks Wide Open Spaces, that is another one purchased on my own accord. By myself. Parents approved of it, of course. My parents mostly, my mom's like me. She listened to a little bit of everything. My dad was very much a, to give you an idea of what my dad listened to, if it's on the Guardians of the Galaxy, he listened to it.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. So if it's in Guardians of the Galaxy, it was done by Bob Seger or it's country, he's listened to it.
Now you're speaking to me with Bob Seger. Oh my goodness.
That's my dad's repertoire. Oh yeah. I used to be, what is it, Night Moves?
Yeah, oh my god. And that whole album is just incredible.
Oh, that's one of the best albums. I don't know why I didn't put that one on here. but I knew every word to Night Moves at like fourth grade. I could jam down. And my parents were okay with that for some reason. But anyway, yeah.
There's no meaning they wouldn't want you to get from that album? No.
Right. That was actually my dad got to see Bob Seger in concert multiple times. But yeah, so that was like my musical influence wise. So picking Dixie Chicks obviously kind of, and it may or may not have been like super, which I'm not ashamed of this, but it was super heavy in FFA. So we got to go to like a lot of, when you're 45 minutes outside of Nashville, you grew up on a farm and you're like, you know, the vice president in FFA, you're probably going to like Dixie Chicks. Like, I'm just saying.
Oh, they were big at the time.
Oh, my God, and they were good. Mm. Wide Open Spaces is just, that was, so the album was called Wide Open Spaces, but the song, which is one of the title track, you know, is a title to one of the tracks, too.
Oh, it came to mind immediately when you mentioned it. That's the song that's playing in my head.
But the one I think that just, like, because this is, so, 98, 99. I like, I'm interested, like, in boys now. Like, I'm actually interested in dating. And so you have Cowboy Take Me Away. So you're like, yeah. Everybody's laughing at me right now. It's okay.
No, I doubt
David,
it.
No, David's sure. listeners can continue to laugh at me. No, like, I guess it's like, I knew what I liked, if that makes sense. Like, I really knew what I liked. But Wide Open Spaces was on there. There was another one that I just loved because it was kind of really funny and fast. And I always wanted to learn how to play the fiddle. So I was kind of highly impressed with these girls. But there's Your Trouble. And Tonight, The Heartache's on Me. Now, that used to be one that I would get asked to do when I would perform with my choir group. I did Tonight, The Heartache's on Me, which is kind of like a faster paced traditional country, like I'm sad song.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of the, you know, not, I don't say faster paced. It was the twangy. Does it make sense? The 90s twangy, like not slow, but not fast. I really thought Cowboy Take Me Away was on here.
Is it not?
I'm currently looking. Oh, it was a huge one. Like, that was a... But, like, I still own this CD. Like, I do. Which now it makes me want to do the Cowboy... Oh, I need to find this. But even... Yeah, so Cowboy Take Me Away, I can't remember what... I thought that was on this album, which was one of the reasons why I picked it, but that's okay. That whole album in itself was just... I don't know. It was really good. It was me being me. I was a teenager. It was me, like, asserting the who I am. Like, hey, my parents like country, but I'm trying to be myself. And vocally, it was... Now, not all these songs, but vocally, they were songs that I could sing or sing along with. Because this was, it was during my show choir days. So, like, vocally, I could do them was also a good appeal. And for the most part, it was, like, a wholesome album. Like, there wasn't anything in it that was, like... I mean, you had your love songs in it, but... I don't know. It was just overall, like... Oh, okay. So, no, Cowboy Take Me Away would have been on their second album, which was called Fly. I had to look that up.
Yeah, I was looking it up, too. My Kindle was running a little slow.
Which actually was, like, a year later. So, it's still 90s. So, both of their albums were 90s. They were, like, back-to-back albums, if I remember correctly. But they were both amazing albums. So, I guess if we grouped them together, because I'm pretty sure you can buy them together. But anything on those two albums, and especially if you're feeling, so those are songs for me on those albums that if you're feeling like I'm feeling nostalgic, because I can, I remember, like, the reason Cowboy Take Me Away was prominent in my brain is because my first, like, you know, when you're in high school and you get your first, I don't want to say serious, but you're like, you're actually like, you're, when you're saying like, oh, that's my boyfriend, or I am dating so-and-so, like, that was one of those songs, like, okay, we have to go to the dance, like, we're forced to all dance together.
Right.
I don't know. I just remember, like, it makes me think of my first actual, like, boyfriend. Like, I'm not in middle school. I'm allowed to be in a vehicle alone with him. Like, I can go for this, you know? So, like, I remember that. It always will make me think of, like, that milestone in my life. That we all go through, you know, we all, like, at some point have to step out, and it's, like, an official, like, you're, I'm dating. And Dixie Chicks was that, that go-to for me during that time. It was, I was becoming myself, like, I don't want to be like, hey, I was becoming a girl. But I, you know, you kind of was, like, you're in high school, like, you're figuring out, you know, because in middle school you had cliques and groups, but you more so had them in high school, and you were figuring out which one you were a part of. And I think your musical influences come from that too, and mold you into current day person. That is where I would have gone. Like, when I was sad, when I was happy, when I was asked to perform on stage, when I thought about my boyfriend, when I thought about life in general, I went to Dixie Chicks during that time. So I knew that they would be on this list at some point.
Nice. Yeah, I grew up on country. That was all my dad listened to, was gospel and country. Mm-hmm. But I guess by this point, like, I was well aware of them. They were around, and they were mm-hmm. all over TV, but I just wasn't listening to country as much late 90s. I was more of
right.
like the early 90s, Garth Brooks, Alan Jackson.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
That kind of stuff. If I ever... trick Nick into getting on one of the episodes, it's either going to have to be about 90s country or Aerosmith. Like, that's pretty much or Pearl Jam. Like, those are our three crossovers.
If you guys decide to do 90s country, I will totally, like, if you could handle more than one guest at a time, I will totally do that with you guys. Like, cool. That would...
Yeah, he's always been concerned he wouldn't have enough to say about music. He doesn't have... He has feelings on it, but he says he doesn't know how to convey them.
It is hard, like that whole like rambling bit I just went on with Dixie Chicks. Like, it's really hard to convey, because everything hits different people different ways.
Right,
and like
right.
You have ties and like strong feelings towards every album that you've picked, and like you said, you tried to pick ones that like meant something to you. And so that's kind of the same thing. Like, I don't know, and I'm like with Nick. I don't know how to use the words like. I don't know how to use the words right now, but yeah.
I understand. I host this show, and I still struggle for words on these albums sometimes. Like, I have prepared statements, but I still struggle at times. Like, it's one of those things, they connect or they don't.
Right.
But it's hard to really explain to somebody why it connects with you. Mm-hmm. At times, but there's been some discussion before. I don't know if it'll happen, but that would definitely, I'd be good with that. I know I'm trying to do various episodes because I did like several just certain bands oriented, and so I'm like, okay, let's do some more hybrid episodes
right.
for a little while too. So, well, any more Dixie Chicks thoughts?
I would encourage you, if this made you giggle, to maybe give them a chance. And if you want funny, then you need to listen to Earl's Gotta Die, which, if I'm not mistaken, may have had Jenna Elfman in the Earl's Gotta Die video.
I vaguely remember that, so I might have seen that video, actually.
I don't know why I'm thinking it's Jenna Elfman, but there's someone that you would know. Well, I feel like most people that are within our friends group, maybe it wasn't Jenna Elfman because the Google search is not. I'll find it and tell you who it is. But there's somebody like known that was in the Earl's Gotta Die video.
Okay. Well, cool. Well, I guess I'll jump on to my next 90s one. And this one, some might see as a little bit of a cheat, because it is a compilation, so it doesn't just have 90s music on it, but it is...
When was it released, though?
Thank you. You're supporting me on this one. It was released in 94. It was Aerosmith, Big Ones. This is the second album I bought of theirs. And without the internet and all that kind of stuff at home, I don't think I even knew all their album names. I knew the songs that played on the radio. I knew what I loved. Mm-hmm. I had a compilation of their 70s stuff that I'd first bought. And this was some of the best hits of theirs that didn't end up on their 70s greatest hits, because they were later after their resurgence. And it is off just combining basically three albums, Permanent Vacation from 1987, their 1989 album Pump, and their 1993 album Get a Grip. But even better than that, it had three songs on there that weren't on their other albums. It had a song off of the Deuce and Butthead Experience, a song called Deuces Are Wild, but it also had two new songs that they had recorded for this in 94, and that is Blind Man and Walk on Water. Walk on Water just has this signature 90s Aerosmith sound, very energetic, fun, aggressive guitars, loud drums. My God, the mixing on this album is incredible. Like, I was listening to it in my car and I'd forgotten how good it sounds. Probably forgotten how good it sounds because in the 90s, my car, well, actually, I didn't have a car in the 90s, but anyway, when I got my car in high school,
right.
My speakers did not sound as good as my speakers do now. They started making better speakers in cars later on.
Yeah, same here. Although, my speakers went through, I put them through some stuff. They were pretty decent.
Yeah. But this album came out in 94, and it had just such great songs. Blind Man's even good. But of the two that were made for this album, I have to say Walk on Water is really, really good. But it has the hits. Where the heck is it?
What's the name of the compilation again?
Big Ones.
Oh, so is, okay. Are these the ones that they used to put out, call it, like now it's like now that's what I call music, but it was a different in the 90s, and they had, is that what it is? Remember did they do several of them, like, depending on the year?
I think they just, Aerosmith, just every once in a while, they knew it was hard to get everybody to just buy every album, so they would just do a compilation, because they had so many hits during
their very
long career. I mean, because if you look at the other songs on here, you've got Love in the Elevator from Pump, Ragdoll from Permanent Vacation.
Yeah.
Like, both those are 80s staple songs. Love in the Elevator, I jammed that song. That was so much fun. And I love the fact that I was able to get them to play that at the reception at, not the reception, Well, I guess like the later part, part of your reception part of Nick and Danielle's wedding was Love in the Elevator. Like I kind of, as a joke, recommended it. They let us pick five songs, any of the groomsmen and bridesmaids. Maybe other people could have too, but I picked mostly classy songs, but that was one. I'm like, Nick loves Aerosmith. I think I can get away with this one. So yeah, that one played on that. What It Takes.
I'm the weird person that's like, Cotton Eye Joe.
Let's see. Dude Looks Like a Lady.
Oh, God, such a good song. I love that song. And that's one, like, it doesn't matter who you are age-wise. You probably know this song.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think it was in Miss Doubtfire, I'm pretty sure.
I want to say you are correct, which is an amazing movie.
Oh, yeah. Then Janie's Got a Gun.
Oh, good song.
And then it comes onto the album, the songs that, it's probably why I bought it, Crying. I love that one. And that's actually one of their 90s songs from Get a Grip. A really good music video, fun.
That is a good song.
But the counterpart, I almost always put them together, is Crazy, also from the same album, Get a Grip.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the one that has super hot Alicia Silverstone on it. But yes. Also, kind of creepily, Steven Tyler's daughter, Liv Tyler, is on the video.
She's pretty.
She's gorgeous. But it was just kind of funny because they were kind of, I don't know. The way the video is shot, it's just kind of weird going back and forth between, like, the band, like, trying to be sexy, and then, like, Alicia Silverstone and Liv Tyler trying to be sexy.
Would that have been about the time that, like, Armageddon and Clueless and all of that were
it would have been a year before Clueless and 3 years before Armageddon, I believe. But,
okay. Things run together. Things
Run together for me. Oh, it's around the same range for sure. But it's just, I don't know, the video is a little jarring for that reason. Like, I mean, the women are definitely pulling it off, but it's just kind of like, how are you acting sexy in the same video that your daughter's later in? I don't know. Maybe I'm overthinking it.
No, I probably would be the same way. I'd be like, wait, so you wanted to make like a sexy video, but that's your daughter. Like, how are you comfortable with this?
I mean, I think in fairness, I think it's more of the Alicia Silverstone in the video doing this stuff, but it was still kind of weird to me. But really good album. I can't not mention
this. Did you
know why
Alicia Silverstone ended up in that video, though?
I don't think I do. Maybe she was friends with Liv. I'm not sure.
Because when she was in The Crush, right?
Oh, okay. Never seen it, but I've heard it's good.
Yeah. The guy, I guess, that was like the... I vaguely remember. I did watch The Crush. I guess he saw her in The Crush and was like, yes, you are going to be in my Aerosmith video.
Nice. It was a good choice.
Okay.
Let's see. Oh, Eat the Rich. That one probably grabbed me. I'd never heard it before this album. Came off Get a Grip, their 93 album. It is so aggressive and, let's see, just weird. Pretty profane. But I love that song. I was trying to think if I had more prepared thoughts on that because it's not coming to mind as strongly while I'm actually talking on the podcast, but no, apparently I don't. But great song, a little bit more aggressive, less radio friendly than some of their other stuff. But and then it finally finishes up with Angel and then Living on the Edge.
Yes.
Yeah. Which humorously enough, I know the Weird Al version just as well as Living in the Fridge.
Maybe we should have a Weird Episode show or Weird Al show.
I might have to. I love his stuff.
Oh my God, he's so great.
Like Aerosmith always just has held such a strong place in my heart because growing up, they were one of the first rock bands I got into because it was mostly
well, and
country.
They cover a couple of different periods in music history.
Oh yeah. But I remember like between Queen and Aerosmith, they were like two of the first rock bands I really got into. So I don't know, this compilation was so important to me growing up. Probably one of the first 10 albums I had on CD at least. And you just get so many amazing hits, but I love the fact that they added in two new tracks and then one kind of rare track to make it more worth your while for those that might have had these studio albums and be like, why do I need this compilation?
That was a big deal too, as far as like purchasing CDs in the 90s. So you always wanted to, especially when you were paying for, like you had the money and you were buying one, you would always look at how many. So if you were like considering two, you're like, oh, I really want this one because of these two songs, but this artist, this album has 15 tracks,
right,
and they normally only give us 12. Like, I remember that was always a key factor in, like, picking what you were, you're like, oh, man, but this one has 15 and these two are only on the CD. Like, ah, because even when you would bootleg or you would rip off Napster and all that stuff, there were still songs that you could not get them. Like,
right,
it didn't matter. So that I do remember this CD that you're referring to, and then others, like, it had 15 tracks, and you were like, what? Like, that was a big deal.
Oh, it was much better than a lot of their studio albums that had maybe, like, 8 or 9, especially mm-hmm. their stuff. I mean, nowadays,
well,
that's
and
just
CDs,
absurd.
You could hold more.
Right.
That was the new thrill of going from the tape, because I too had a lot of cassette tapes. Like, the cassette tape, either you had to flip it over. Remember, you had to, like, flip
the
other side. Like, please flip to side B. A lot of them would even say that. Like, please flip to side B. So you had to like, flip it. And even those, like, there's only so much tape that could fit into those. So with CDs, we bumped up to, like, hey, we can do more, and you don't have to flip it. And then as they started improving CDs, like, guess what? This one has 20 tracks. And you're like, what? Like, you know. So it was always pretty cool.
The most mind-blowing one to me has always been Beatles number one, that they were able to fit 27 songs on it. Like, I mean, it has
yeah.
to be like 78 or 79 minutes. Like, it's pushed to the limit. But it's just because their early songs were so short. But
mm-hmm.
it's just, I look at that, I'm like, how is that even possible? But yeah, this, like I said, this album was important. Still one of the greatest compilations I can think of a band putting out, and it's mind-blowing that it came from three albums, like back-to-back albums, because Aerosmith was huge in the 70s, had a couple crap albums in the early 80s, and then they got back in their, they got their groove back, basically,
oh,
in the
definitely.
Late 80s, and they didn't, I mean, they'd never lost it, but like, they kept it for a while, and put out three really good albums back-to-back, and then some other, I'd still say, good albums.
Yeah. Definitely.
But that's pretty much my thoughts on this album. Like, I almost didn't include it because of the 80s parts being on there, but I'm like, screw it. I got it in the 90s.
Right, that's why I was like, when was the release date? Because technically they released, and if it released in the 90s, and if it's an album of the 90s.
Right.
So, it counts.
So what is
oh,
your...
And I find...
Go ahead.
Oh, I finally found out. So Jane Krakowski, I always say her name. She's in Kimmy Schmidt, the blonde. Well,
oh,
she's
okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Different. She's been in like a ton of other things too, 30 Rock. And so she is Wanda, who is the, you know, because it's Goodbye Earl, which they say over and over again, girl, Earl's got to die. But the song's actually Goodbye Earl. So Wanda, she's the one that Earl's like being a shithead. Or crap. Oh, excuse me.
You're fine.
I said a bad word. She's the one that, like, is being abused, because that's what the song is about, is, like, she's put up with being abused for so long that Earl's got to die, actually. And I knew it had big-name people in it, because it also has Adrian Pastar, who was in, he was in Heroes. He was Nathan Petrelli in Heroes. He's been in Carlito's Way, just a bunch of different stuff. But he's the police officer that helps her. So there's like some big name, like they probably weren't big. They weren't big names then, but like now you know them. Like Lauren Holly's in there
oh, okay.
as her best friend Marianne. Dennis Franz is Earl. You know, he was on NYPD.
Yes.
for, like its entirety, I believe. But yeah, everybody that's in it is someone that's is. Well, I think one of the police officers, he and the guy that was the lawyer, because it really is like a short little, but everybody in it is somebody that you're like, oh, so to introduce yourself, if you never actually did any Dixie Chicks research, you have to go at least watch that music video and like see the people in it, and it's funny.
I'm going to have to. It's actually my favorite things about 90s music videos were how funny they were at times and told stories.
Right.
That's actually the one thing I miss about music videos more than anything.
It told a story. Like, it was a big deal. It wasn't just like swinging around on a ball. And
what song could you possibly be referring to?
I have no clue. Licking hammers and swinging around on balls and
or just boring footage of people playing a song, but like not really playing the song. Like that's so lame in music videos that they do these days.
Right.
Like I know you're not playing. It doesn't even look like you're playing because you're like not aggressively doing it and everything. I don't know. It was crazy.
It was an art form.
Yes.
And I think that's part of what goes into your attachment for whatever 90s music that you pick is that video to go with it, that second my brain is anyway, like that other kind of, it was like a completely different thing. It was a different medium. That's what I was trying to say. Like it's a different medium to take it in. So sometimes it was watching the video and then having a reaction to the video that made it your favorite song.
Oh, yeah. There are certain songs that I can't not think of the video or that I would think of the video first and then be like, oh, that's a song. It's definitely a staple of the 90s that I miss.
I do. I do miss that a lot.
So what is your fifth album?
My fifth album is Super Duper Fly by Missy Elliott. Came out in 97.
Nice. Okay.
97. This album had so many big names working on it. And this is really the album that made people go, oh my God, Missy Elliott. Like it was her debut. It did have a parental advisory, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, I would imagine so.
And there was kind of like we were talking about earlier, there was outros and there was an intro and there was an outro and Busta Rhymes was featured and Lil' Kim was featured and Da Brat and Timbaland and it's just, and a lot of them, like, you wouldn't, the name of the song isn't what you would think the name of the song would be. Aaliyah was on here. Like, this is, I don't know, it was just fun and catchy and...
Oh, I miss Aaliyah. She was incredible.
Oh, my God. Like, I honestly probably should have put her on there, but that was a hard one. Because that's like, she had a couple of different albums, and all of them were amazing. So, but yeah, this was just, it had a lot of talent on this one CD. It also just shows you, if you go in and you look, Missy Elliott, with the exception of a couple of these tracks, is the writer or is one of the writers on almost every single track.
Nice.
And so she wrote it, she performed it, and if you remember, she was big on, like, she could dance. Like, even when, you know, she was in her heavier points in her life, like, that lady could move. And that's not something you see much anymore where they're moving and doing the song, like, they're not lip syncing. Like,
right.
They're doing that all at the same time. It's definitely, and it talked about, I mean, some of it talked about things that, like, in 97 I had, like, no interest in, but, you know, I don't know. I don't know a specific song on here. Probably the one that is referred to. It actually, so the song that is the Super Duper Fly song is not called Super Duper Fly. It was called The Rain. And I don't know why. Like, I've never known why that happened. And that used to happen a lot. 90s, 2000s, where everybody knew the song under one name, but it actually, if you looked at the artist track, it was like, no, this is actually the name of it. Like, well, that's not
you know,
name.
One of the prime examples of that was Fatboy Slim's song Funk Soul Brother, but it wasn't called that. It was Rockefeller Skank. Of all things, like, where do you get Funk Soul Brother from Rockefeller Skank? I don't know.
I don't. Beastie Boys was that too, was like that too, which I am now really mad at myself and really surprised that I did not have a Beastie Boys album on my list.
It happens. They certainly didn't come to my mind at all during this list, so I must have.
I think even though they were big in the 90s, I think I listened to them more high school. Because we started blending into the 2000s. I was in high school. So I think it was more like in the 80s. Like, I listened to them when I was little and then again when I was older. So I correlate them more to like 80s and 2000s than I do the 90s.
Yeah,
even though a lot of their stuff that I listened to came from the 90s.
See, most of my knowledge of Beastie Boys was more from License to Ill, their 86 album. Funny that you mentioned that, though, the bleed into the 2000s. I actually, when I first thought of three albums that I was going to put on this list, three of them I disqualify because they actually came out in the early 2000s, but they just, in my head, I was thinking 90s. So,
no, I did the same thing. I had people that I were like, oh, what about, you know, so-and-so? And then I would look it up, and I remember who it was now, but there it was someone in particular that when I looked it up, it actually came out in like 2001. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I actually will say I had a lot of albums that I almost put on this list, but then when I got to thinking about it, they were more of one hit, like a singles thing. And I was like, oh, I can't do that. I had several like 90s. I had several songs that are still like to this day, favorite songs. They come from the 90s. They will always be, like, if you asked me what were your favorite songs and I started listing, they would be in there. But I was like, the album as a whole, no. Not sure about that.
It happens. There were a ton of them back then, or there still are, but definitely back then that were, you know, one or two good songs in an album, but that's about it.
And Missy Elliott, honestly, I like some of her later albums and works more. But I remember when this came out, I don't know, I just was, I don't know, I remember being enamored with the whole album. Like, there were certain songs that I would go and repeat just that specific song, but, like, the whole album I was just completely enamored with. And it may have been one of my first, especially in 97, it may have been one of my first CDs that I was allowed to have that had the parental advisory sticker on there. Because there definitely was...
Oh, and I'm looking at the track listing, and I was like, I want to say
I got this through Columbia House, guys.
Nice, okay.
Do you remember that? When you would, like, you'd fill out the little card, you'd pick your five, and you'd put a money order in there, and the money order was, like, $10, and you could get all five of those for $10, and then every month they would send you a CD, and you would, if you didn't like it, you sent it back, or if you did, you kept it, and then they sent you a bill. Yes, like a legitimate bill. And for like the price of the CD, because you were a member, you got it at a discount. And then they'd send you the catalogs every so often. So a lot of mine that like I purchased on my own, when I learned about like Columbia House, I got them that way. And I couldn't wait for that Columbia House box to come. Oh my God.
I wish I'd gotten involved with them in high school, because I'm sure I could have gotten a lot more albums, but my dad had a bad experience with one of those record companies back with, during his days of pulling vinyl, that he just really didn't trust those companies, so we never did it. His vinyl collection's, I might say, crazy big, but it's pretty impressive back from his
end. My parents' vinyl collection was pretty impressive. We had one of the – it, like, set in our living room. It took up, like, a whole area that you would put, like, a shell. It was one of those tabletop where the doors slid back on either side, and then the speakers were on the front of it. So it looked like a giant table with two slides on the top of it, and it took up like a whole wall in our living room. And there was like only one store that sold needles that my mom would have to drive to every so often. But their record collection was pretty impressive too.
Now, did they also have 8-tracks?
We did, actually. So born in 85. And when I was born, my mother and I actually still lived with my grandparents because my parents didn't get married till 89. So we did. My kind of mentioning before, my grandparents were doing good, especially like for their time in the 80s. And they had an 8-track player. So we did have 8-tracks in the house. I remember them. And we even had like one of the first versions, a camcorder, remember, that didn't take off very well. What was it? Betamax.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so we had 8-tracks and Betamax. And then the one thing we never did, which I remember school did, and I was talking to somebody about this the other day, was the Laserdiscs. Like, so they were like the size of a record, but it was essentially what a CD does. And sometimes it would have a movie on it, or sometimes it would just be music. But yeah, they had 8-tracks. And then they did have their vinyl. We still have some of our vinyl. We don't have, of course, the player anymore, but we still have several of our vinyl pieces. Now, my mother's collection was, like, impressively extensive, and she did pretty awesome with it. But being in the music industry, a lot of times she got given, like, albums.
Right.
You know, So, yeah. I remember my favorite one, though, is we had the Chipmunks Christmas album, like vinyl.
Nice. Oh, yeah. That's
as in, like, Alvin, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I listened to that so many times growing up, and that was on vinyl as well.
Yeah, we had that on vinyl. I know people are getting back into vinyl, or like, and they're like, oh, look at this vinyl I got. And I'm like, you don't even know the half of vinyl, but okay. but I do like it. It's easily accessible again, vinyl is at least.
Right. Sorry, I didn't respond immediately because I thought I did accidentally close it, didn't stop recording my recorder. And I was like, crap, please tell me I didn't.
Because you use the same one we do for Geeky and Saucy. So you have to like click every so often and say, yes, keep recording. Yes, keep recording. Yeah. No, that's fine. so vinyl was super cool. But we got onto vinyl because that's like the Beastie Boys. Maybe that's why. So a lot of their songs like were 80s.
Right. They had a lot of 90s songs too, but I just.
They did. Intergalactic is my favorite, and I think it came out in 97, 98, but I didn't get into it until, like, the 2000s.
Right.
So. But now they are, like, if you ask my husband his favorite band, he's a Beastie Boy like, all the way.
Nice.
All the way. So.
Well, I can't do any 90s list without including this band. This is a band that. One of my first memories of music goes is from this band. It's not the album that I chose, but I'm going to go with the band Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes!
The album that I chose is Californication, but my love of them and memories of them goes back to their 91 album, Blood, Sugar, Sex, Magic.
Yes.
Under the Bridge. That
I was not allowed to buy that one, by the way.
Oh, no, I... Even if we'd found an edited version, there's no way my parents would have let me get that, just from the title alone. But Under the Bridge was my first introduction to them. I remember that watching that video constantly was on MTV. But Californication was actually, I think, 99, I think, when that came out. When it came out, I was so excited because somehow, as often happened, and I would miss certain albums and bands. Like, I'd know one of their albums, and it'd be like a lot of years before I'd hear maybe two albums down the line that maybe just didn't get much play on their radio or whatever. Californication was kind of my re-familiarization with this band, and I'm trying to think, was it Scar Tissue? Was that the first single or Other Side, which was first?
Other Side, maybe?
Wikipedia article.
We may need to go to the Google Foo for this, because I don't remember.
Oh, Scar Tissue was first. Okay.
Oh, was it? Okay.
And I remember, like, I liked this song, but it didn't grab me as much as Other Side did. But according to Wikipedia, supposedly Around the World came out in between Scar Tissue and Other Side as a single. But I don't think that really played much in Alabama. Like, I don't remember that hitting the radio. I remember that.
That is weird how it varied by region, because I've heard people when we've talked about bands. And we both grew up in the South, but I grew up, like, bottom of Tennessee or top of Tennessee, bottom of Kentucky. So right. my hometown is like literally the first. If you go up 65 and you go through Kentucky, you've been through my hometown. We're the first to exit in Kentucky on 65. But it's amazing how like we're only 6 hours apart, but what was popular here from the Red Hot Chili Peppers and what would play on the radios here versus what I would get up in my like Nashvillean area is different. And I think that's kind of cool too.
Yeah, oh, it definitely, and I think it just varies also, just radio stations in general, they gravitate towards certain songs. I'm going to blur in my words. But this album is just incredible. One of the reasons why I love this album, though, is because of one of the main guitarists, John Frusciante, came back for this album. He had left mid-90s because he didn't like hitting... Famous, I don't think. I think that was what it was with him.
Mm-hmm.
And Dave Navarro came on and did their album in between, and it wasn't nearly as successful. So that's probably why I didn't hear much about it. But this album came out, and you got them back in amazing form. I mean, Flea has never put out a bad bass track. Like, that dude can play some amazing bass.
Oh, my goodness. He is impressive.
And so you get him and Chad Smith, one of the most capable, really good drummers.
Mm-hmm.
Just they get into their own little groove, and that allows for Ashanti just to go all over the place on guitar, he doesn't have to really do the rhythm of the song because they're doing the rhythm of the song.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about a rhythm guitarist. You just got them doing the main part of the song, and for Ashanti can do whatever the heck he wants, and it still works. So he does some like 70s like psychedelic stuff at times, and just can really do, like I said, whatever he wants. And it's, I don't know, this album, you've got the big hits, Scar Tissue, Other Side, and my favorite, Californication, because of this, the drum part was just so incredible to that. He did this, like, it was almost like a drum roll, and that's with the snare, that it just kind of reminded me of stuff that we were doing in band, but hearing it in a pop song or a rock song was just so important to me and so incredible to me. So you got that, you got, like I said, the big singles, but you got weird stuff on there too. Around the World, so energetic and funky. Parallel Universe is great. the song Get On Top is energetic as can be, I'll say. Easily just has a beautiful flow, kind of more mellow for them. Let's see, did I? Let's see, yeah, I made a note of Get On Top. It's definitely more about the guitar part that I like about it. The lyrics are just kind of all over, but that's Anthony. He's a great singer, but sometimes his lyrics are a little hit or miss. A song called I Like Dirt. Now, you know you got some depth there when you got a song called I Like Dirt. But it's a fun song. Like, I just enjoy the crap out of it. For hashtag reasons, it's a song called Emit Remus, which is just summertime, spelled backwards. And he sings it as summertime. But for some reason, let's be artistic. And
it's again, remember, it's not what it's named.
Right. Like, so that was just, it's just always funny to me that that was on there. And then you end out the album with Road Trippin'. And that is just, it's different than everything else in the album. I think that's one of the things I love about this album. It's 15 tracks, but you get so much variety on there. Like, it's not just the hits, but you got some bizarre, funky stuff. And
I had to look, honestly, because one of the songs that I remember predominantly being a huge fan of in the 90s from the Red Hot Chili Peppers was Higher Ground. They used it on the 1990s Power Rangers movie.
Okay.
Which everyone's heard me talk about that. Like, I secretly was in love with that movie in the 90s. I'm openly in love with it now, but like I hid it then. But I looked, that actually was in 89. I thought it was on this album. Like I cause it was around the same time, but it's not.
Right. I know. I discovered that several years ago. Cause, I think that's when I heard it. It was in another movie around that time too. But do you know that's actually a Stevie Wonder song?
It is. And it's been performed by several other people too. It was a Stevie Wonder, which when you're like, what, how is that a Stevie Wonder song? But so it was a song, but it was also performed by Playing for Change. And, oh, goodness. I looked at this the other day because that's when I was like, oh, I didn't realize that that was not a 90-something album. Santana did
okay.
It. Which he did a lot of stuff, though. And Playing for Change. And then there were some other people that I'd never heard of, actually. But I think it's because they did it after Stevie Wonder did it. So it's a completely different version, by the way, guys.
Oh, like, definitely.
Like, you got to listen to it. It's pretty cool. Like, if you didn't know that it wasn't just something that the Chili Peppers did, like, it's really cool listening to the other versions.
Yeah, the Chili Peppers, they have a wide variety. I can't get into their 80s stuff other than Higher Ground very much, but...
Well, Higher Ground sounds much more similar to their more recent work, like their
right.
their 90s and later works than their 80s stuff.
Because their 80s stuff was just basically funk and rap, like that, with a little bit of like
yeah.
hard rock added in there too. Like, it was not the most accessible stuff in the world.
It's like they decide if they were the Beastie Boys or not, in
right.
a way. Because, you know, the Beastie Boys were very different and were very kind of like, they rapped. On occasion, they, you know, were kind of that funk sound on occasion. So I agree with what you're saying. Like, 80s Chili Peppers is almost like it's a completely different group.
Oh, it is. Like, that's, I've got their whole discography thanks to ways. And but let's just, the 80s go to a whole lot, but the 90s, I love it. And even actually the early 2000s stuff. But this album, like I said, I knew it had to be on the list, and I was so happy that it did barely make the cutoff with 1999. But I think the reason why most of my albums are towards the later 90s is because that was when I was able to start buying more of my own music and really getting more stuff, whereas before, I mainly just listened to the radio and got occasional cassettes, but by the late 90s, I was actually getting some of my own money that I could buy stuff.
And I recorded things on cassette off the radio, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did that a ton. I had to get some of the songs. Well, do you have any memories with Chili Peppers besides that?
Not really, because Higher Ground was really kind of like my favorite. I didn't become a Chili Pepper. Chili Peppers is one of those things that I became a fan of more late high school, early college.
Mm-hmm.
But Higher Ground, I remember Higher Ground. Like I actually owned, and I think I still do, that original soundtrack that Higher Ground was on. So that was my really only like 90s connection to them that I really enjoyed.
Okay, cool. Well, I just, real quick for the listeners, kind of down, 5 albums each. Mine was Offspring's Americana, Stone Temple Pilots' Purple, Goo Goo Dolls' Dizzy Up the Girl, Red Hot Chili Peppers' Californication, and Aerosmith' Big Ones. What were yours? Yours were, I know the Missy Elliott was the last one.
Yeah, so the last one was the Missy Elliott Super Duper Fly. Before that was Dixie Chicks' Wide Open Spaces. The various, it's just called 96 Grammy nominees. But I think in some of the titles it says various. And then I did Tragic Kingdom from No Doubt. And of course, like you said, the TLC, Crazy Sexy Cool would be my 5 albums wise.
Nice. I love the
if we
diversity.
Did songs, it would be different.
Well, I love that because I remember thinking, I was like, I wonder if she's going to have the rock stuff like me, or she's going to have more of the hip hop, and so you had some of everything.
Yeah, I'm very much all so like a lot of the stuff that you and I listen to now is referred to as alternative rock because we've had discussions before where we're very similar taste in current music, but previous I was very poppy,
right,
or country twang, and even like the rap, but like the dance rap, like Missy and Aaliyah, like this, like I liked R&B and pop, and which I still like everything, but like as I get older, I tend to find myself listening like one genre, like not as like jumping all over the place as I used to.
Right, it's
I
easy
wasn't.
To do.
Yeah, I became more of a rock person in high school. I got real big into. I'm trying to think. Oh, these are all like System of a Down, and yeah. I got real big into things like that in high school.
Nice, yeah. I almost had some rep on mine. I couldn't quite come to it to put either MC Hammer or Vanilla Ice on there, but
I really wanted to do Vanilla Ice, but I, to be honest. And you may have had the same thoughts. There were really only 2 songs that, like, I had an album. But there were only 2 songs. Like, I didn't care for several together.
Right. Oh, no, definitely. Most of the album was not good. The MC Hammer one that I had was actually much, much better as far as actual quality. It's more consistency, I guess, throughout the album. But the rap album that came the closest to making my list is so different than anything else on my list. But because it really comes down to just a few tracks that I love, it had to get cut. And that was actually Dr. Dre's Some One, which shockingly came out in 99.
Yes. That was I loved that.
That one came really close, but when it came down to I only love like 3 tracks off of it. I like a lot more, but like I love 3 tracks. Forget About Dre, next episode, and I'm having to bring maybe still Dre.
Well, isn't Forgot About Dre when we entered, like that's when the world was introduced to, I mean, well, he had been a D12, but isn't that when the world kind of like got their first taste of Eminem?
It was around that time. I think he had My Name Is before that, but this was probably his biggest hit that he was featured on, I would imagine, at least up to that point. I can't remember the exact timeline on that. Am I right on that?
See, I actually, I heavily debated the Slim Shady LP because it came out in 99, but.
Well, then actually, you might be right. It might have been Forget About Dre. I was thinking Eminem. I was thinking My Name Is. When did that come out?
Let's see. Was it on the Slim Shady LP? That's what I was going to say. Like, I think it took a little bit longer for it to actually, like, come out where people were, like, it was radio, like, where we were introduced to it.
Yeah.
Because my name is, sorry, it was a mouthful. I was like, am I saying that correctly? I am. My Name is on the Slim Shady MP. I will say, my parents knew when I was mad. My parents knew when to not come into my bedroom if Eminem was on. If it was loud and I was, like, letting the rest of the house hear Eminem. And this was the age where it was, like, they were starting to say less to me if I cussed, like, in a conversation. And I wouldn't cuss, like, at them.
Right, right.
Big difference. Yeah. Like, but it was when, like, if I said a cuss word or I at some point, like, I started buying my own, I purchased my own clothes. I purchased my own music. I paid for my own stuff. Like, so they had less rules, and my parents weren't strict people. Like, they were, but they were not, because I didn't do, like, I didn't have to have a reason that they needed some rules. But I thought the Slim Shady LP had come out later than that is one of the reasons why he didn't make it, and because it's close to the end of the 90s.
Right. Oh, yeah, it barely scratches it.
It was released in February of 99, but... like, it's more of like a 2000. It's more of a 2000.
Well, I don't think it started hitting bigger. Like,
I don't
have memories of My Name Is until I would think 2000s when my memory of that song starts hitting.
That's what I was going to say. I remember about my sophomore year, which was 99, 2000 ish. Or was it 2000, 2001? No, because my years are together now. But I remember it being more of a predominant thing in my sophomore year. So that's why, and that's when we were starting to hit the 2000s. So it doesn't, right.
Well, cool. I'm still really, I'm happy about the diversity of the list, because that was one thing I loved about this topic, was being able to get such a variety of stuff. And that was another reason why I was kind of happy not to share the list previously, just to be able to be surprised.
Right.
As we dropped them. So that was a lot of fun. So do you have any honorable mentions you want to throw out before we...
I will honorable mention a couple of songs, because they were the two that I only nixed two albums from the list, because when I thought about it more and more, it was one individual song on each album that is the reason why I bought the album and was in love with that artist. So No Diggity from Backstreet.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, that's like a go-to to this day. Like, I love that song so much. Inappropriate, maybe? I don't know. but I loved that song. And then Killing Me Softly from the Fugees.
Nice.
Which that album, the whole album from the Fugees was really good, but I bought it just for Killing Me Softly. And I don't remember, I can't not name you any other song on that album.
Right.
So I almost, it's called, the album was The Score. But those two were, like, I almost had Blackstreet and the Fugees both on there. And they didn't make it because individual songs. So I'm sure you came across that too. Do you have, like, specific songs that you liked to put the whole album on there because of the one song?
Well, yeah, the Almost Eve 6 album. Almost put on there, but when I was going through the album, it did not resonate with me the way it used to. Like, I still love Inside Out. That's an incredible song. Well, I mean, not incredible, but a very good song. But it just couldn't, I don't know, just as a whole, it did not seem like it was deserving of the list after I started going through it. Two that I almost put on the list, I just wasn't feeling the other day. They're great albums, but just wasn't in the mood for them and didn't think they quite made the cut, and that was Green Day's Dookie and Nimrod.
I almost put Dookie on mine, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. It came really close, and I love them, but the other day, I wasn't feeling it. And so I went with what my mood was feeling more, and there were plenty of other albums to pull from, so I didn't. And then the last one I almost put on there was Creed's Human...
That is a good... It's a good album.
So, when I really look back at the time when I bought it, though, in the 90s, like, the songs that I liked, I mean, I really only bought it for a couple of songs, and that was about all I was listening to at the time.
Creed, one of the bands that, believe it or not, like, people didn't realize, but they, like, were a Christian group.
They were never Christian, but he had that religious background that he couldn't really help but kind of bled into it, I think.
Because I want to say, I used to attend there used to be on Saturday nights, because I am from home of the, do you remember the TBN network with the pink-haired lady? It was Christian.
Yeah.
So I'm from where that was done, like where the network actually was, the home of it. And on Sunday nights, they had, it was music videos and stuff like that. But they would sometimes do like live, like what if Jars of Clay, Creed, people like that would come and play. And then it would broadcast at the same time live on their Saturday night, because from a certain time on Saturday night till early Saturday morning, it was about, like, it was trying to get teens' attention, because that's who's up at that time.
Right.
And I wanted to really say that the Creed, they had Creed come play for us, because we used to get to go.
It's possible, because, like, there was so much confusion, because the first album, My Own Prison, has so much religious, like, and stuff like that he talks about on there. And minus the one track, there's no profanity on it, but there's definitely one track on there that you never could consider it Christian radio, because it says GD in it.
Right.
So
and I think that was the line that was really hard for some people, because whole album, well, there was one album as a whole. I don't remember what year that was, like 2001-ish, where the whole album, like, reflects very strong positive Christian beliefs, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So they were a weird one that I was always like, are they or not? And nobody's ever given me a clear answer.
No, it's
so I just
kind of
want to know.
From what I understand, Scott Stapp just has that. I think his father was a evangelist or a preacher or something.
I want to say you're right.
So big into his upbringing that I think it just, it came out in his lyrics. Like, it just, I don't know, just one and the same. But, you know, I know Mark Tremonti has always been outspoken, the guitarist, about that they were never a Christian band, and that, I mean, I don't think,
okay.
I'm not sure that, I don't think he's a Christian, actually, if I know for sure. So it's just one of those things. There was, but, yeah, there's a lot of confusion. There were other bands. I know Collective Soul, one of the Christian music stores I went to, used to think they were Christian because of some of the lyrics and stuff like that. There's always been bands like that, that there's confusion, and sometimes they get stocked, like I say, in some of the stores. So I think that's probably more of what it was. But,
well, and I don't know if you're familiar, the band Red.
Mm-hmm.
They've won several Dove Awards, the Christian Music Awards. They've won several Dove Awards, but I think they're another one that, like, they're not technically, they're not Christian, but I don't know. When you said Creed, it just made me remember that, and I was like, oh wait, like, I wonder what. If he knows, like, what he thinks.
Oh, yeah, I remember at the time I thought so, because I hadn't even heard What's This Life For, so I didn't even know that song. I'd missed that somehow. If I'd heard that, I would have been like, yeah, definitely not a Christian.
Right.
Yeah, I remember The Weather 2001, and that was their last album, and, yeah, briefly, they were still people talking about being Christian, and I think even briefly it might have been stocked at some places, and then they're like, no, definitely not. And then Scott Stapp had his breakdown, so it was definitely, oh, okay, definitely reflecting imagery we're cool with. But yeah, that was a band that came close. There were so many others, and there are others that just missed it by the years, you know, being later than I thought they were. But
yeah, missing it by the year, it only being like one song on the album. But I will say, like, I was really excited about, because initially I was like, hey, would you ever want to talk about alternative music?
Right.
And then when you came out with the 90s, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so fun. And it really has been. I've enjoyed it. But it was hard. It was really hard. And it made me, like, relive moments and memories and, like, discussions that I don't know how I remembered. Discussions that I had with people, that song or that album tied to that. I don't know, there was just all kinds of memories that came pouring out with, like, each one that I would listen to, each song. And you asked me if I'd listened to anything, and I didn't, like, say what. I the 90s on 9 station on Sirius, I pretty heavily, and like yesterday I got to sing along to Let Me Clear My Throat, which like I didn't forget about, but I forgot about, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it was just really cool because, just to reiterate the fact that this was a huge time, like for you and I, this is when we were growing up. This is right. when you are being heavily influenced by people around you, learning what you like, what you don't like, when you're being influenced by music and finding other music. And, it was just kind of exciting to go through and be like, okay, well, what five albums, what five things, if I looked back on my 10 years of, you know, becoming adolescence to adulthood, meant the most. So it was really cool. That was, it was really cool.
Well,
thanks.
Good. I'm glad. Of course. Thank you for joining me. I'd had this topic thrown at me a while back by a listener, Andy Helene, and I had been looking forward to it. I was just trying to find the right time, and we had talked about doing an episode, and I'm like, you know what? I think Miranda would be great on this episode. So,
I'm beginning to think there's a pattern, though, because this is the second show I've been asked to come on to as a guest and talk about 90s-related things.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
I was on so Mike that owns Fanatics and Enterprise, mm-hmm. And his friend Caleb. They had two podcasts, and my brain is like kind of going crazy on what their current. I'm sure I can pull it up. But right after Fanaticon, because we had, you know, a 90s related guest at Fanaticon this year, mm-hmm. We just kind of in. Off topic, we're talking to each other in casual conversation. Masters of Malarkey. You know, we're having this great 90s conversation. Let's start talking. We talked about like 90s cartoons that we used to watch and 90s like TV crushes. So then Jenny and I did an episode, just her and I. We didn't have a guest. And we did our top 90s shows. Once again, like with music, there were several I almost picked and they actually happened in the late 80s or, you know, things like that. So,
right.
I'm beginning to think that maybe I do know more about the 90s than I thought I did.
Nice. Yeah, I know the memories kept floating back to me listening to it in my car. I know, and it helped that I was driving through my hometown just a week ago.
Oh, that
would have
been amazing.
And I even drove through a part I hadn't driven through in years. And oh my gosh, like the mixture of the music and that just the memories flooded back, and it was so beautiful and just all the great memories from high school came back. Not the crap, but the great part of
right.
it. And
there was some crap that came back because like a certain song would be tied to a certain word. Like it was really kind of emotionally draining,
right.
but like in a good way, if that makes sense, because it was really, really just crappy situation then. But now you look back on it and you're like, I survived and I needed that. And it was petty then, but yeah, I did have some kind of like crappy memories too, but it was good. It was good.
Well, cool. So what do you and, I was about to say Miranda, you're Miranda. What do you and Jenny have coming up? Do y'all have any plans for y'all's next episode?
Yeah, we do. We are going to be reviewing the Doom that came to Gotham for an episode. It's a older Batman trade. We're going to review that.
Okay.
We're kind of discussing some, playing around with some other ideas. We haven't had a guest in a while, so we're thinking about having a guest, of course. We're getting super close, so I kind of want to like toot horn about it. Jenny and I, since we have begun, have done, and actually we will be having our 2-year anniversary pretty soon.
Nice.
We kind of became like the CW girls of Place to Be Nation, so to speak. Well, I'm calling us that. I mean, I don't know if anybody else calls us that, but the reason I say that is because every year we do a fall TV premiere episode, and then we follow it with a completely separate it's called our CW extravaganza is what that's actually called it. Every year we have a CW extravaganza and we go over all of the CW shows that are current running and will be continuing. And then we go over new CW shows and then we say which of the new ones we are going to be giving a go, or if we're not going to give it a go at all, why we're not going to be giving it any time, like to woo us or wow us.
Right.
But that's going to be, with it being the end of or the beginning of July now. We're going to review a comic. We're getting close to new TV time. So we'll have our fall TV premiere or preview that we like to do, and then our CW extravaganza. We always love doing that one, too. So I think that's our favorite one to do. I think it's one of our favorite. But I know it is for me.
It's one of my favorite to listen to because I love the CW shows. It's incredible. We keep getting more and more and more every year.
Yeah. And it's kind of become a tradition now that usually we have Russell Sellers from Sellers Point on that episode with us as well. So it's kind of like a tradition, like CW Extravaganza. If you've never listened to Geek and Sassy, we kind of get long-winded, as you can tell. I think I made David's podcast go way longer than he's ever recorded before.
No, it's not longer than my Tom Petty one, but it might be my second longest, though.
It may be second longest. But yeah, we tend toward long. We talk about a little bit of everything. We have a couple of segments that always happen, which are fun. They're really fun.
Nerd Eye Candy, I look forward to every time. Okay. Like I haven't shared mine. I need to just start sending you all my Nerd Eye Candy sometimes.
I would like to start mentioning like listeners' Nerd Eye Candies, and just I think that'd be really cool. So definitely send me your Nerd Eye Candy. I would say, but we don't really have a theme because, for example, mine one time was randomly. Remember when the Hot Cop fad was going on?
Yes.
Oh, so you remember? You're laughing because you remember that episode. So yeah, like our Nerd Eye Candy, I was like, mine goes out to the Gainesville Police Department.
Well, you did it. Those, and then you also the security guards in D.C. You gave the shout out to as well. So
I did. I gave a shout out, and I wanted to know if there was a prettiness scale for D.C. Essentially, they're a Secret Service or D.C.
right.
Police officers. And I wanted to know if there was a prettiness scale. And yeah, that if you, I would encourage, not just because I want people to listen, but I would encourage them to listen to that story because I remember saying some pretty funny stuff during that segment there. But you were one of the people that is in our group that I was actually sending you guys pictures of
I was sneaking
pictures of them as they walked past and being like, look, because you can't pose for pictures. Yeah, they're not allowed to pose for pictures. But if you sneak a picture on your own, like they won't like come like take your phone away from you and throw it down.
right.
You can't say, hey, can I take a picture with you? Or you can't like pose now. If you're like, hey, click, like nothing they can do about it. So I was kind of sending our Place to Be Nation group that we have. I was like, look at this. But yeah, I have no shame, I guess, really. Maybe is what it is. I don't know. But yeah, send us your Nerd Eye Candy. I'd like to see what it is.
And how can people reach out to you?
Both of us together, Geek and Sassy or just me?
Both.
Okay. My Twitter is public, for my personal Twitter, and Instagram is public. They're both under Mom's a Nerd. That's like a personal handle title that was given to me. I do have a Mom's a Nerd Facebook page that you can like, and I will I'll message you and stuff. My Facebook though itself is private. So I've had a few people try to friend me lately from hearing me on podcast. I figured I'd say that at some point. My personal Facebook is private and personal. But Jenny and I have a Geek and Sassy page. I have Mom's a Nerd page. They're both pages you can like. We'll interact with you. And so David interacts with us a lot on Geek and Sassy on Mom's a Nerd. I've been posting 90 things, hoping you would see it.
Oh,
and you have.
Well, yeah.
You have the different 90s videos. I think I even tagged you in one.
Okay. Like, hey, yeah. I remember that.
But you usually see it. And then we're on Instagram for Geek and Sassy. We're on Twitter for Geek and Sassy. The only weird thing I will say is if you are conversing with Geek and Sassy, not just Miranda, if you're conversing with Geek and Sassy on Facebook or on Instagram, you're actually talking. If you're conversing with Geek and Sassy on Twitter, because Jenny has Twitter game, her Twitter game be strong, and mine not so much. There's occasional I'll answer, but if you're talking on Twitter to Geek and Sassy, you're actually talking to Jenny.
Well, cool. Yeah, I thought I remembered you saying that before. Mm-hmm. Well, and I crazily enough, realized that I never said my name at the beginning of the episode. But I think if you listen to the episode, you know it by now. My name's in the title, Sunday Groove. But you can find me on Twitter, Sunday Groove PTB. And then David Sunday on Facebook, if you'd like. Definitely reach out to me one of those ways, send a message, whatever. Definitely let me know if you listen to the episode. I always love to hear feedback, whatever it is. Recommendations. I know I can always count on people to give me some new recommendations, and I will be continuing to do a lot of those episodes down the line. I guess I'm moody when it comes to episodes, and I just have to be in the mood feeling that.
No,
that
I get
topic
I get
at
that.
The time. So yeah, some of them it just takes me longer to get around to. But yeah, I was trying to think if there's anything else. I don't know what next episode's going to be about, so I can't give you that. Go listen to our other shows on Place to Be Nation Pop, Heartstrong
yes.
Fanboys. Check out, if you're not easily offended, check out Comic Book Theater, one of the most bizarre things you'll ever hear.
It's one of the greatest things I've ever been asked to participate in. It is, but it is, and I forgot to say as well, Geek and Sassy, we are explicit at times, so if you're not interested in that, we don't take offense. So, yeah.
And let's see, Sellers Points, it's on hiatus, but there's tons of good stuff, and I know they'll be coming back soon. Marvel Age Podcast with Nick, Todd, Tim, I was trying to combine their names, and Russell. Marvel Age Masterclass with Ben Morse and one of the people from Marvel Age. I'm almost left out.
You have a it's a veritable heaven, remember?
Right. And it's actually it's the pup network. But also talking about pop, you got to go with Talking Pop. Very explicit at times, but if you're not offended, once again, check that out. And that's Danny and Tim.
Yeah.
Talking about all kinds of different things, but there's tons of stuff on the network. Definitely, like I say, listen to the stuff, like it, respond to us, let us know what you think, and come back, you know, every month for it. So once again, thank you, Miranda, for joining me, and I will catch everybody down the road.
Go chasing waterfalls.
Aspirations and hopes are coming true. Believe in yourself, the rest is up to me. Yeah.
Go, go,